Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. What, already? Okay. It's Tuesday. This is already my second day. For those of you that missed our amazing Labor Day show yesterday, we were labor law, labor history. It was an amazing thing. I love doing holiday shows. I absolutely love holiday shows, first of all, because nobody else is doing them. They're all on vacation, so you get the best of, which is like a repeat. Okay, so if you want to listen to repeats of other people, feel free to go ahead. But if you want a live show, come on here. Let me bring on right away one of my favorite people, our new superstar. We have a couple of young reporters, and Brianna Cannon, one of them. And so she does the government inquiry report, where she gets to try and stump me with the most amazing questions, whatever's on her mind. So, Brianna, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning. Pretty good.
That's good. Did you do anything Labor Day related on Labor Day?
I painted a doghouse.
Well, that's labor related. That's different. Well, the reason I ask the question is because so many times holidays, it's like an excuse for a barbecue or a used car sale or something completely unrelated to the holiday. So what we try and do here, in fact, I think I might do this later on. So I'm going to get you guys involved, you and Amber involved. Amber's one of our other younger reporters here. And on July 4th, Declaration of Independence, but what I think I might do is Martin Luther King Day, we do a group reading. All the reporters are invited to read a section of the Declaration on July 4th, and so you definitely have to come back for that if you can, before all the barbecues and, of course, way before the fireworks. But Martin Luther King Day, I think I want to do a reading of the I Have a Dream speech and do the same thing, where all our reporters are open to come join us and read a section of that speech, because that's pretty incredible, too. So if you're interested, let me know. I mean, we won't start that till next year, obviously, but that's something that might be quite fascinating to do. Have you ever read a speech out loud just to get the impact of it? Do you ever do that in school?
Possibly, but none that I can remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
There's a possibility I did.
Well, try it sometimes. Speeches are meant to be read, and the impact. I'd say every time I read the Declaration of Independence out loud, it's a profoundly different experience than just reading it. It takes on a whole new life to it, which reminds me of a little joke that I kind of came across this weekend. And I sent you and Amber an email on this, and I'll tell everybody else what I did too. It's on my Facebook page as well. If you take Brandon's speech, the one in Philadelphia with the red background, with the Marines kind of in shadows and our flag, and I don't know what the other flag is. Maybe it's the presidential flag, which obviously he shouldn't be standing beside. But you take the Russian national anthem, take the old Soviet anthem, and I found this loop recording of it on YouTube. And so you put that at about 20% volume, and you play that in the background, and then you put on Brandon's speech, and you start that, and him speaking to the Russian national anthem in the background is absolutely hysterical. Have you tried that? Do you remember, was that interesting to you at all, or did you give it a shot, or because you should. I mean, trust me, this is funny. What do you think?
Yeah, I haven't gotten around to pulling it up on the computers yet, but I still have some time to do that. But
you're busy, I understand. We've got doors creaking in the background, so tell the creaking door person. Yeah, stop doing that. We're getting it on radio. Okay, so what you got for me today? What questions would you like to inquire of government?
So from your talk yesterday, I only got a little bit into it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this may be repeated. I don't know.
That's okay. Doesn't matter.
So to start
it's
off
new
with,
to you, so, you know, feel free.
There was a really good discussion the other day on, like, a Patriot Academy chat thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of, like, the students from there. And
okay.
It was about, like, Labor Day.
Hmm.
So the first I guess thing I'll start off with is about Labor Day inherently communist, and unions are inherently communist. And I think you said this in your one yesterday about how they are inherently Marxist.
No, I didn't say that. No, actually, I said just the opposite. No, in fact, it's interesting that in our labor history, the reason the labor movement came about was because the conditions of work were so atrocious in this country. You had child labor, you know, kids 5 and 6 year old were working in mines and mills and bakeries. And I'm not talking about nice little corner bakeries. I'm talking about factory, massive oven, flour dust everywhere bakeries. And these people died at a very young age, 30, 40 years old. They worked, you know, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. They had no life. I don't know how they had kids and raised families and did anything at all. I don't even think they had time for church a lot of times. Then they went to like a 5 day week, but it's still 16 hour days, you know, and these conditions were so bad that the workers decided that they wanted better treatment. And so what they did was they started protesting and of course the corporate bosses didn't do anything about it. And the corporations were aided by the government. And whenever you have a corporate government, you know, tyranny, that's called fascism. That's the definition of fascism, is the government merging with the corporations to create a tyrannical situation for the people. Contrary to what the left will tell you, that fascism is freedom. That's Orwellian. That's Orwellian doublespeak, where they take something that's one thing and tell you it means just the opposite. So the labor movement, because of these horrendous conditions, it's like there were a lot of, like on the trains, many of the porters and Pullman car people and things like that were black workers. So there was huge discrimination against black workers in this country. That made up a big portion of unions. So the unions were created to make better working conditions for people. And one of the biggest things that spurred people on was when workers couldn't get anything from the companies because the companies didn't care, and the government and the courts backed the corporations, and they said that strikes were illegal. People went on strike anywhere, and they were literally killed. They were shot. They were shot by corporate goons. They were shot by an organization called the Pinkertons, which was a sort of a detective agency started back in the old cowboy days. But a lot of the people that worked there were World War One soldiers who were, you know, killing was like their job, you know, because they'd learned it in the war. And they actually would shoot strikebreakers, and people were killed in you know, anywhere from 10 to 30, you know, strikers were killed, which is it's not a genocide or a mass murder, but the idea that your company will shoot you, you know, if you're trying to get better working conditions, was something that actually happened. And so the labor movement grew, and along with that was the civil rights movement and the women's suffragette movement, the right for women to vote. And so these things were all kind of coming together. Now, where it gets interesting, where it gets bad, is that the socialists and the communists saw an advantage here, and they thought, well, if we can tie ourselves to the unions and get the unity and prove that capitalism isn't working, capitalism means company towns. It means, you know, death of black lung in the mines. It means, you know, women dying in fires and these horrible conditions. You ever hear about the Triangle Fire? It's one of the things I went over yesterday. You know the Triangle Street Fire? Okay, so there was a company in New York City, and it was about a 15-story building. And it was most of the folks that worked there were immigrant women, and they were paid virtually nothing. And it was what they call a sweatshop, which is just like it sounds like. You work for nothing, you get paid horribly, and it's hot and dirty and disgusting, and everybody's sweating all the time. So literally a sweatshop. And what the employers did, because they didn't want workers taking a break, they didn't even want restroom breaks, they didn't want anything, they locked the fire escapes. They locked the exit doors. They locked everything to keep people in, right? Well, the thing caught fire, and like 147 women died in that factory in New York City back in 12, 15. It's in my labor history from yesterday. But that's how bad conditions were, that the company owners thought it was okay to lock all the doors and exits to prevent people from taking a break, you know, make them work, and a lot of them died, and we'll just hire more people. You know, that was the attitude. So you can see why workers, you know, in other words, the average American citizen was pretty upset with that. And so one of the biggest ways towards the middle class was by unions, because unions promised a better working situation. Now, to me, a private union is completely constitutional. It's freedom of association. You've got a closed circuit in that the company and the union bargain together. So the company bargains collectively. They do that through their manager. Managers can't make up their own policies. They have to bargain on what the company tells them. So that's a collective bargaining unit. So the worker being an individual, it's not fair for an individual worker to bargain against a collective company. That's inequity. That's not fair. That's an inequality situation where a proper contract cannot be arrived at. So the union member pays dues to a union to represent them. And so the union bargains collectively with the collective management. That's an equal situation. I don't have a problem with that, okay? Because if the workers ask for too much, the company can't pay the workers, they go broke. You know, if the company wants to pay too little, the workers go on strike. But when the workers go on strike, they don't get paid, and the company doesn't make any money. So nobody has an interest in going on strike, but they do it because of the promise of better wages. And the biggest reason we have a middle class in this country, especially for blue-collar workers, is because of unions. Now, where the unions went wrong was when they adopted and supported all Democrats all the time, which are now Marxists, and they were infiltrated and taken over in many regards by the Communist Party, the Socialist Party, things like that. So unions themselves are not inherently socialist, but they can get that way if they take their politics, you know, beyond collective bargaining with companies. So when they stop representing union members, oh, I hear the dogs in the background. You got a busy house this morning. Anyway, but do you see where the idea of a union is a good thing? Raising wages, increasing benefits, you know, getting things like that is a good thing. But if it becomes, you know, socialist, communist, we got to bring the system down. We got to impose, you know, the very tyranny of the corporations. Okay, the absolute dictatorial, tyrannical power of corporations is what the socialists and communists wanted to replace with the absolute tyranny of government. That was the problem, and people didn't see that. They thought the communists and socialists were, you know, workers of the world unite. We'll all unite together. We'll make a workers' paradise. Everything will be great. Well, the socialists and communists never had that in mind. They wanted tyrannical control through government, and the really bad capitalists wanted complete control through corporations. It's still bad. It doesn't matter. I mean, tyranny is tyranny, whether it's corporate or government, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the question is, having given you that background, how do you see unions now?
Well, personally, I think unions are good. That was just
okay.
Something that was brought up.
Yeah. Well, see, now, did they think of that on their own, or is that something that somebody told your friends, or how did that come about that unions were communist? Because that's an interesting thought.
I'm not really sure, like, how they thought of it or heard it from or anything. I really don't know.
Okay. Well, I was just curious.
But
okay, do you make a distinction? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm done.
Okay. So do you make a distinction, as I do, between government unions, like the teachers' unions, SIEU, federal, like postal workers and things like that, government unions as opposed to private unions? Do you see a difference?
I never thought about the difference too much, but I can see how private ones would be better off than corporate ones, because corporate ones can get crap.
You mean corporate ones?
What?
You mean government unions? Private unions would be like the Teamsters, AFL-CIO. Government unions would be like the teachers, you know, the SIU, I forgot what it stands for, but, you know, workers, unions that represent government workers, for example. I'm just curious if you make a distinction. I do. In fact, I talked about it yesterday, but I'm curious your view before I tell you my view.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know enough about it.
Okay.
I haven't really learned much.
Well, take a look sometime, because that's something I might talk about in the third hour too. As far as I'm concerned, government unions should be illegal. And so did Presidents Roosevelt, Coolidge, and some of the other, Reagan fired the air traffic control. And I found out that government workers could not unionize in the federal government until JFK signed an executive order. So one of the first things I want to do is talk to folks I know as the election gets closer in 2024, that Trump should revoke that executive order and get rid of the power of federal government people to unionize, because they already have civil service protection. And the difference with the reason I make a distinction with government unions, tell me if this makes sense, is that when a private union, say you've got Teamsters negotiating the UPS contract. The UPS is a big company, very successful company, and almost all that company is unionized. All those truck drivers are all unionized. They're Teamsters. So when the Teamsters go to the UPS company, that's a big contract. But they're both limited by the company, because, like I said, the union can only ask so much. If they ask too much, the company can't pay. They're going to go broke, and the union members lose their jobs. So the union members don't want so much exploitation of the company that they lose their jobs. They don't want the union asking for too much, but they don't want to make $5 an hour either. They don't want to make nothing. So what they come at is a better contract for the union members than they could get as individuals in non-union companies. That's the whole point of the union. But there's a closed shop. There's a financial limitation of UPS. They can't negotiate UPS so badly that they go out of business, and everybody loses. So the company says, look, we can't pay you that, but we can pay you this. union says, well, why don't you just give a little bit more? We'll get some health benefits. Oh, okay, fine. And eventually they come to a deal. That's free association. That's constitutional. A government union. So who do the teachers go to? Well, they go to the government, county, state, whatever, to get their contract, right? Well, who pays for that contract? Do the politicians pay for that contract? No, we do. Taxpayers. Trust me, you'll get there. So if the taxpayers are paying the government unions, because the union government union people work for the people. They don't work for the government. They really work for us. But yet we have no say in their contracts. And the politicians can award those government unions anything they want, and they do that to buy votes. That's why the teachers' unions and the Democrats are so closely linked, because the Democrats give them ridiculous contracts. I mean, absurd things, you know, huge pensions, amazing benefits. They work half the year, 180 days a year, and they do better than most other people, and they have incredible power. And they do that to buy teachers' votes. But the teachers' contracts are not voted on by the public, and we're the ones that are paying for that contract. So a government union separates who pays for the contract and who approves it. Whereas in a private company, it's the same organization both paying and approving. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, I know that's a lot. I know,
that's
is it time to feed the dogs?
That...
I have a bunch of dogs in the background, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, so
yeah,
there's a distinction you may not have thought about, but given the information that it was a lot to give you right now, what do you think?
What do I think?
Well, it's about,
about
unions in general, or the distinction between government and private unions, the labor movement, anything that I talked about. Anything strike you as worth more questions or interesting?
I guess that the teachers, their union is like directly the government, and that there's no people say in it. I've never really thought of like the distinction of, you know, they work for the people, but the government has the choice. I never put that together.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. Most everybody else doesn't either. That's an Action Radio thing. But that's how I talk about the idea of a government union. And I'm not the only one. There's a lot of people in politics, especially conservative politicians, that are looking at this and saying, wait a minute. You know, these contracts are being approved, but, you know, politicians are spending taxpayer money to pay teachers, for example. Well, are the taxpayers approving that contract? Does it go up for a vote? You know, do you get, do your folks have a teacher contract? And people pay taxes, whether you're homeschooled or private schooled or, you know, however schooled, you're still all paying taxes for the government schools. So should not the government contracts for teachers be put up for the voters to vote on? Well, if you're interested in writing a bill on it for your city, county, or state, that might be an interesting idea.
There's definitely a long list of bill ideas.
I know. Just look, I've got 173 on a file. You're just getting started. Pick the ones you like and go for it. Okay, well, let's talk about labor. As someone who's, you know, not in the workforce yet, taxes. You really haven't been hit by taxes yet. Work in general. You can tell me what profession you're thinking of or not. It doesn't really matter. But the whole idea of work and taxes. What do you think would be a reasonable rate of taxation on your work? How much did the government get, percentage wise?
You mean like on your like income? Is that what you're saying?
Uh huh.
I don't know exactly where income taxes go, but just on like the principal alone, I don't think there should be any taxes on your income.
Mm. Well, some states they're not.
Because that's like punishing the profit makers.
Okay. She's so smart. This is great. Florida, one of the reasons I moved to Florida is Florida does not have a state income tax. I left California, which does have a state income tax. So not only did I have to fill out a federal tax return, I had to fill out a state tax return. And the state of California, you think the feds are aggressive? Try living in California. They want money so badly. They'll go after everybody. Now think about this. So traditionally, the threshold of revolution, as they say, when they go back in history, the way they used to collect taxes back, you know, Middle Ages, a long, long time ago, a tax collector would literally go to your house and say, I want this much of your crops, this many farm animals, whatever. They would actually take from you your tax, and that would go to the king or the landlord or, you know, or whoever it was that was the boss. And that was your tax. Okay. So people, the way I think history established 40% as the threshold of revolution. In other words, if you took 40% of somebody's earnings, whether it was crops, animals, money, whatever they were selling, goods, things like that, at that point, people said, that's enough. You can't take any more than that. So the governments, in order to keep peace, you know, you keep around 10, 20% taxes. I mean, people are happy. So, okay, fine. Yeah, I understand that. You know, God only asked 10%. So why is the government asking like 30? It's an interesting question. Well, let me ask you that question. Yeah. What do you think? If God only asked 10%, why should the government ask for 30?
Well, they shouldn't. I think that's the first thing. But also for the reason why, there could be like a, I don't want to say logical, but I can't think of the right description word for this, but they maybe think of it in ways of they need it to support and fund this and this, pay this and this, but it also might be just because they want more money and more power.
I think you're onto something. So the question is, and this is something for you to ask, you know, and this would be a good thing for Patriot Academy, what is a decent level of taxation, and is government spending where they're supposed to be spending it? Now, if they can't raise enough money through taxes, and yet they still want to spend money, what do they do? How do they raise more money?
I'm not sure.
They borrow it. Right? So the government wants to spend more money than they... So they borrow money. They literally borrow money. They issue debt. They issue treasury certificates, and I forgot what they're called. But people buy those, and the government pays them interest on that. And that's the people loan money to the government to fund things when the government doesn't have the money to do it themselves. They make a loan. They borrow the money. That money goes to the national debt. Okay? So when the government...
Yeah, like bonds? Is that what you're saying?
Uh-huh. Now, I'm not sure exactly how it all works. We need a really good economist to explain this. And I got Pianca in the line. I'll get to him in just a second. But the point is that the government borrows money. Well, they got to pay for it somehow for those bonds. So they print money for the money they've borrowed, right, for the debt that they've incurred. So then when they print that money goes into circulation. So if the government prints a ton of money, what happens to the value of each dollar?
It goes down.
Exactly. And what's that called?
Inflation.
See, I knew you'd know. You're right on. So inflation is caused by government borrowing and then the government printing of money, which is why I have a constitutional amendment that changes Article 1, Section 8 and removes that sentence that says Congress shall have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. You take that out and everything changes. It's a one-word amendment. I'll talk about that in a bit. But think about it in terms of labor. Oh, there are the dogs again. So in terms of labor, that'll bring up Pianchi. If you're laboring, if you're working in the market and the government is creating right now 8% inflation, that means the value of your money and therefore the value of your labor is being reduced 8% and you have absolutely no control over that. So you actually have to get an 8% raise just to break even this year because of the money that's being lost. That's value that's transferred away from you to the government and the banks. At 8%. That's why governments love inflation. They love inflation. Taxes go up. Everything else goes up. So as a person who's going to be entering the labor market, might you find it beneficial to be in a union?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
no, it's up to you. But like I said, I mean, there's no right or wrong answer. But you can qualify and say, well, let me think about it. But there's variables to consider. For example, most unions are blue-collar, but that's changing. That's probably one of the things I want to talk about. Apparently, there are a lot more what they call white-collar unions, you know, like accountants as opposed to plumbers, are forming unions because the workforce is changing from a blue-collar to a sort of a kind of a – there's not as big a difference between, you know, an auto worker, you know, and an accountant kind of thing. So everything's changing or, you know, and so the markets are changing. So unions, I think, are going to become more attractive. I've always been a fan of unions, which is rare among conservatives because they think, well, the corporations should be able to do what they want and the workers just have to take it. No, because we know where that leads. Pianchi, you got a question for Brianna?
No, you talk about accountants. Artificial intelligence is pretty much taking their jobs.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, that's let's ask Brianna. How do you think artificial intelligence is going to affect the job market as you get ready to get into it?
That's like those human robot things, right? That's what we're talking about?
Jackie, maybe you can explain better than I can.
No, it's when you use software to carry out the operations that people would do sitting at a desk with pencils and calculators.
So who's going to be doing the accounting? Now, there's certain things that can't be done, like talk show hosts. Although I suppose you could automate a talk show host, but it wouldn't sound very good. But lawyer, I don't think you could automate a trial lawyer because there's too many variables. You could probably automate the weather people. Who else could you automate? I don't know, Brianna. Do you folks talk about this? That if artificial intelligence takes over a ton of different jobs, what are you all going to do for work?
You wouldn't have work. It's very dangerous, AI.
Okay. What do you think? I'm
just
curious.
Me or?
Yeah, I'm talking to you. Yeah, but I mean, like I say, if you don't have an answer you want to think about, that's fine. It's perfectly fine. But have you and your friends thought about a changing world of work? Because we're talking about Labor Day issues. You know, if people aren't working for a company, if everybody's an independent contractor, there's nobody to strike against. Because you're not working for a company, you're working for yourself, even though you're contracting yourself to a company. So one of the ways that companies can avoid unions is to have everybody as independent contractors, which is what they're moving to. How's that sit with you?
Hmm.
I think I'm filling you with more questions than you're giving to me this morning. I think we reversed our show.
I think if there's like an independent contract, it's still kind of like, in your words, like bargaining together for it,
mm-hmm.
correct? Or would that be just...
Well, I was just saying, the independent contractor, you have more control over your contract. You can do it or not. I mean, it's up to you. But generally, independent contracts, companies that offer independent contractors do it so they don't have to pay benefits. They don't have to pay extra stuff. They don't have to pay workman's compensation because you're not officially hired by the company. You're working for them independently. But an independent person, the advantage is hours, working conditions. You define the work because you're an independent contractor. And if the company wants you to do things that aren't in your contract, you don't have to because you've contracted for a specific kind of work. So there are advantages and disadvantages. The other thing is, as a contractor, I think you can write off more expenses because you're basically your own business. So if you're an independent contractor, I don't know if Uber works that way. You can probably write off the cost of your gasoline because that's a business expense. Whereas if you're a cab driver, the company writes it off. You know, health benefits are another one. Companies write off health benefits, which I think should go to individuals. I think individuals have to pay for health plans as part of their paycheck, you know, withholdings. That should be tax credit for the individual, not for the company. And that's something that a union could advocate. I don't think they do yet, but maybe some do. So these are all things to think about. Pianki, do you know about that? Do you know of any companies that or any movement to transfer the benefit, the tax credits and tax deductions for health plans, you know, from companies who take them now, which came about back in World War II days, to individuals so that they get the benefit and not the company? Or they at least take the tax credit on the cost of health insurance?
Well, you know, it just depends. You have some companies that pay for it themselves. I don't know if many companies that pay for it themselves. I guess they do, but I'm more familiar with the construction industry.
Mm-hmm.
And those health and benefits are deferred from the raises or even their hourly rate being put on the check, and it just goes to those benefits. But what you're talking about were companies were paying, offering health care in the wages that they're paid. It's just different. I don't know if there's too many. The pensions don't change from pensions straight out to 401ks. So.
Yeah. Yeah, Brianna, let me paint you a picture of work back a few generations, you know, before me. The way work used to be, people would work for one, maybe two companies, but generally one. They take a job out of high school or out of college. The company would keep them. They would grow with the company. They get retrained. They move, from labor into management, and then they get the gold watch after, 40, 45 years, whatever the employment was, and the company would give them a pension for all that loyal service over the years. That's gone. That world doesn't exist anymore. Now people are switching jobs like crazy, and it's not thought of as a problem. It used to be a problem. If you had more like two or three jobs in the course of your lifetime, people thought there was something wrong with you. You know, this is like my parents, my grandparents' generation. Now people are switching jobs. You've got independent contractors. Work is much more fluid, but you don't have the stability of a company that's going to train you. They're going to fire you or end your independent contract. They're going to hire somebody else to do whatever the next job is. So the workers themselves, you guys have to be more fluid and more adaptive. I think it's worth taking a look at. You know, in fact, something Patriot Academy would do is the world of work is changing drastically.
There's two questions or points with this. The first one is, I don't know much about this, but I learned that California is not allowing any like independent contractor like truck drivers to come in anymore. Like they're only allowing like corporate truck drivers to come in to like deliver and haul and everything.
Yeah, that's a tax thing, and I'm not sure exactly how it works, but they want people – I don't know if they're about so much letting folks come into the state, but they don't want companies hiring independent contractors or what they call gig workers, like Uber and some of the – and like what are the food delivery services, you know, Grubhub, things like that. They don't want independent contractors because the government makes more money from the taxes on wages, income withholding and things like that. So that's a money thing. It's not that they have a problem necessarily with independent contractors. They want the money because companies with more employees generate more money for the state. Bianca, have I got that pretty much right?
What did you say? What was your question?
Take two. It happens. We get distracted on the show. Well, what do you, think about there's something else I want to bring up before Josie gets here, but yeah, that's the reason they're doing it, is that the government makes more money with salaried employees, especially if they're union members, than they would, because the greater the wages, the greater the income tax. So if you got independent contractors, writing off a lot of the money they make, the state's losing money because you get paid on the money, your profit, if you're an independent contractor, rather than your wage if you're a worker.
Yeah. Well, you have some states like Missouri. Missouri has the Hancock Amendment, whereas if state income exceeds a certain percentage above their expenditures, that money goes back to the taxpayers.
Well, that's good. Yeah, but that's not what California's doing. California wants to keep all the money they can. That's why people are leaving. The taxes are high. The regulations are ridiculous. And you can't be a gig worker. You can't be an independent contractor because they want like the truckers. They want everybody employed. Another thing California did was they set ridiculous air quality standards for diesel trucks. Diesel trucks have what they call particulates because that's just the nature of diesel. Those are particles. So diesel engines emit more particles. Doesn't mean the particles are dangerous. In fact, the smoke people see from the trucks is actually less dangerous than the chemicals. The nitrous oxide, sulfur monoxide, nitrogen monoxide, which eventually forms sulfur dioxide combining with H2O to form H2SO4, which is sulfuric acid. That's the old acid rain. So people see smoke and they go, oh, no, the smoke coming out of that truck is dangerous. No. The stuff you can't see could be even more dangerous. And so those are things to think about. So there's a lot more to it than you expect. But I got Josie on the line. I want to ask one more question of you. When you think about unions, do you and your friends and peers think about the fact that the reason you have or your folks have at work lunch breaks, vacations, workman's compensation, the 8-hour day, the 40-hour week, time and a half for overtime, unemployment compensation, things like that? Do they think about the fact that every one of those things came from unions and the union movement, back in the early 1900s? Brianna?
Yeah, I don't know if they know about like all of the different things that came from it, but they like in the discussion they recognized all the benefits and stuff. But they were saying that with all the benefits that it created, it's becoming a corrupt, you would call it. Or you could just say it's unions in general.
Okay.
Yeah. That was what the point they were making.
Was one more time again? That the unions were
wishing. That was the point.
Well, it's
that even said, like with all the, even with all like the benefits and stuff that they made and created and everything, they're becoming more corrupt.
Well, anything with money becomes corrupt. They're corrupt corporations. They're corrupt unions. The question is, you know, do they do what they're supposed to do? You know, and can you separate the good from the corruption? So the good would be a decent contract for workers if they can negotiate. I mean, you got sports agents negotiating $1 million contracts. Nobody complains about that. You know, why would you pay a worker $25 instead of like 12? You know, if they can get it and raise a family and you know, do things like that. And that's pay a union for. Let's get Josie in the conversation, see what she thinks about unions. Josie, you got a comment or a question for Brianna before we get to your report?
Good morning. Not really. I just joined a few minutes ago, sweetie. I'm sorry.
Oh, don't be sorry.
I know
no,
you guys
no problem.
Are talking about taxes or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I always have the option if you want to blend in with the previous report, because I never know, because sometimes folks have a chance to listen, sometimes they don't. I
Thank
have
you.
To because I'm doing the show. So it's always an option. So, Brianna, any thoughts, labor unions, labor movement, things you've heard, haven't heard? I mean, we can pick this up next week, too, if you have more questions. But, you know, the whole Labor Day thing. Any revelations?
I guess I just learned more about all that it did and the different kinds of unions and the powers and everything. But
okay.
I don't think I have really anything else to say on it. But there, what you were saying earlier about jobs with AI and contractors and all of the different things, another problem that's rising up and stuff, I don't know how long or when it was first coming in. I don't know any history of it. But outsourcing of giving American jobs to, like, foreign countries and stuff because it's cheaper for companies or easier or they have more workers for more time and less money and different things like that. Outsourcing is becoming a bigger problem.
You know what? Write that down for next week. That's a great topic, and the difference between the Trump America First plan and the Biden, you know, China First plan. That would be a great thing because I'll tell you about Mexican car companies and a bunch of things like that. Josie, do you want to add to that before we get to you, or do you want to get right to your report?
Well, what's happening in the United States is they're hiring all these people from all over the world, especially Amazon. I have a friend that he has about 7 workers. He's not hiring any people in America. He's hiring people from, I think, the Philippines and Bangladesh, most of the people working for him. And they charge very cheap, and he's making good money with Amazon. So.
And they, of course, checked their E-Verify, and they verified that these are American citizens working there, right? He said with a grin.
The people working for him?
Mm-hmm.
They're not American citizens.
That was my
from
point.
The Philippines, yeah.
That was my point in asking. So Brianna, you've got 2 million, and they're not done yet. 2 million illegal aliens. They're all set to take whatever job you want, and take less money for it. Something to think about too. I got some bills for that as well. I'm not trying to depress you.
All right.
I just tried to inspire you to do something about it. All right, let's get to Josie's report. Brianna, you're welcome to stick around, or if you have to go, feel free. Thank you again, and you get to talk more next time. I think I took too much of your report this time, but we'll fix that next week. Let's get on to Josie. She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey, who's already here. So please,
yes.
Dobre utra. Continue.
Dobre utra.
Buenos días.
Buenos días. Buenos días, dobre utra. Qué bien. Yes. This morning I wanted to talk about Chile just for a couple seconds here.
Mm-hmm.
People already are not happy in Chile with this new president that they have. But for a while they've been bouncing back and forth this new regulations that they want. And they had a vote in one stroke of one vote. The people came out and vote against this bill. The bill was supposed to be for legal abortion, universal public health care, you know, like they do, and mm-hmm. another one to make sure they hire equally female and male on a job, improve labor unions, greater anatomy for indigestion groups, constitutional rights to house, for housing, education, retirement benefits, internet access, which is stupid, clean air, you know, global warming, clean air, water, sanitation, and care from birth to death. So all these communist laws, some of them are good, of course. People in Chile voted no against this bill. And the new government, they're not too happy about it. But
I'm surprised
you know,
that went to the people. Was it a referendum, or how did mm-hmm. that go to the people? Because that's interesting.
Well, I think they had this in place. I think what happened is they had this going on for a while before the president was elected, so they didn't have any choice but to put it out there for the people to vote, you know. So it was already going to happen. But the people voted against the legal abortion and all this nonsense stuff.
Well, it's interesting. You're talking about we're talking about labor unions earlier, and Brianna was asking the question about whether they were communist. And in this case, that's what the government wants to do. They want to infiltrate the labor unions, mm-hmm. turn them against the people, and bring about all these government policies like cradle to grave health care and everything else like that.
Yeah.
And once the government controls your health care, it's like when the government controls your electricity, they make you buy an electric car and then they take your power away. So that's the bad use of unions. But the unions, if they believed in freedom, were actually against those kind of policies. I remember when the Teamsters endorsed Nixon and Reagan, so the unions uh-huh. aren't always Democrat and liberal and socialist, but they can mm-hmm. certainly be, and a lot of times they are. And so this is interesting what's going on in Chile. Like I said, I'm surprised that not only that it went to a vote, but that the vote wasn't stolen and changed by the Chilean government to throw the vote.
Yeah, it was a fraud. This vote to put this left communist president, it was a fraud. The same thing happened in Colombia. The same thing happened in Mexico. And the same thing happened in the Ukraine. Our government is placing all these communist people in place. But it's going to change.
But it's interesting, because they allowed for they threw the vote. So they threw the vote to elect the communists, but the referendum, they didn't make it consistent. So why would the people vote in a communist government only to deny the communists the very powers that the communists wanted? So that's a contradiction.
Well,
so that should stand out and
go,
wait a minute.
I think because they're so new in power, you know what I mean? They want to see... tell the people, oh, you're part of us. You know what I mean? Like when
Daniel
Daniel Ortega won in Nicaragua the presidency, uh-huh. he was allowing the pueblo means the people from the city or the people in Nicaragua to join him in a lot of things, and like if they were part of the family, and then after that they turn into a snake. They change like a snake. So, yeah. So now people in Nicaragua, they hate Daniel Ortega. They wish he was dead, many people. But you know what? These people, anyone running against him, he was sending them to be put in prison or in jail. That's exactly what this communist, criminal Democrat government is doing. They want to put Donald Trump in prison. That's exactly mm-hmm. what Daniel Ortega did with all his opponents. They went and arrested them, so they won't run.
It's only the laws that separate us from them, because we've got the Marxists that want to do exactly in the communist countries to us. They want to steal the vote. They want to convict everybody of some crime. They want to have political prisoners, which they do. And I was asking why habeas corpus has not been instituted by at least one. I didn't know the federal judge could do that. But all those people could be sprung by any federal judge saying, go and prove the case right now. Show me the accusation. Show me the evidence. And when it isn't there, every one of those people should be out. But not one federal judge, not one district, circuit, appellate, or Supreme Court judge or court has done a habeas corpus writ. I'm going to ask Jonathan about that Monday. I said, why the hell are those people still there? But the only thing that saves Donald Trump is that he still has we still have our Constitution. We still have our laws. He's going to get what they call this master. That's a new thing for me. I'm not sure what that is. Go over the documents. But the only reason that Trump is not in jail is because we're the United States of America and we have a Constitution, you know, what's left of it. But he's able to use the laws, you know, the way they're supposed to be used to exercise his rights. But in these communist countries, you don't have any rights. So if we were Nicaragua,
that's right,
we
they
were
don't
Chile,
have any
or
rights.
Yeah, if we were any of those other places, Donald Trump would have been in jail or worse by now, because the deep state wants power. They want electric cars.
The deep state. The deep state's been so corrupt for so many years, Greg. We did not know how bad it was. So before Trump and all that,
pretty good
was
idea.
deeply corrupt, but they were doing everything and letting us get away with this and this and this and that. But now they're right in your face telling you who they are and what kind of power they have. But that power is going to be taken very shortly.
Well, what are the geldings doing about it, for example? I know we say that. I'm still waiting for a date and a time.
Be patient.
No, I know. If I was patient, I wouldn't have started Action Radio. I mean, the whole reason for doing this is because I'm not patient.
Yeah, okay.
Not even a little bit. I want action now. I mean, I want action 6 weeks ago. I want it, you know, long ago.
Well, they have their plan, and we don't know it. We only
I don't care about their plan.
The puzzle.
Their plan. And the reason I don't care about their plan is because it hasn't been implemented. So if they have a plan to implement, do it. But every day that they wait is a day that people sit in jail for no reason, that political prisoners are there, that Americans are suffering, that inflation goes up, that Brandon, you know, and I made a point in my Facebook post today that blaming Brandon for these problems, that's the distraction. See, the deep state stole the government so they could put these policies in place. The deep state, the Democrat, Republican, establishment, rhino, transgender Democrat deep state stole the government so they could reverse what Donald Trump did, so they can go back to business as usual, dealing with China, paying for NATO, using Ukraine as a money laundering operation, letting
in
2 million illegal aliens, restricting our energy. All the things that are being done now is by design. Brandon has nothing to do with it. These are the policies of the deep state,
Obama.
Of the Democrat, Republican, Mike Pence, Obama, you know, coalition, the Bush family, the Clinton family, everybody else. But the point is, hold on, Josie, hold on. But the point is that this is all by design. Now, I know you say there's a plan. I know you say that things are going to happen. I don't believe it. I think that's all a farce. It's like the sovereign state citizen nonsense. It's a bunch of nonsense.
It's okay. You're in plan B.
Well, I know it's okay because I'm right on this one.
Time.
You know, but see, you can't say that. You can't.
Yeah, but
well, it's not okay. I know, but it's not okay. It's not okay.
Plan B means
because it's not okay to make Americans
wait. Like a lot of people are impatient. Plan B means that you don't have a lot of the knowledge that I do, and I cannot tell you everything because you don't tell our enemy everything.
That's
when
the
we're
old
hit
trick. Here's the myth though. Your enemies already know.
No, they
see
don't.
The American people. Yes, they do. The American people are always the last ones to know. Okay, this is why I don't mind telling about things about like the Constitution, you know, 22nd Amendment that says if Donald Trump takes off, hold on. If Donald Trump takes office January 21st, he will serve less than 2 years of a term, which means he can run again in 2024 for the presidency. So he'll have less than 2 years of the term, the one that was stolen, and he can still run in 2024. And I can say that openly because I know the Democrats already know that. They're not stupid. They can read the Constitution. So the idea that you're saying, well, we can't tell our enemies what's going on. Your enemies already know. You know, I was reading something today that Emerald Robinson, who had me on the show last week, has a report from Peter Navarro that trade negotiators, just Jared Kushner and other folks who are betraying Trump and betraying Navarro and Wilbur Ross, the trade representative, and contacting their counterparts in China, you know. And so the Chinese know the plans. So the only people that would be in the dark about this is the American people.
China is going to collapse completely. Yeah.
Okay, because why? Because why?
The economy. The economy. If they're going to collapse completely.
It's a communist economy, so that makes sense. But why? Give me a why. Why is it going
to
collapse?
They're going to try. They're going to try to kill Xi. The economy is going to collapse.
Who's going to try and kill?
That.
So they're going to try and kill the leader of China, Xi?
Yeah, look, this is what's going on. It was kind of like confirmed last night. This is what's happening. Donald Trump is working with Xi and President Putin to reform China and to reform Russia. Look, in every country, there's mafia, EKGB, corrupt, and that's exactly what's been going on in Russia and in China.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the military are in charge with the corrupt in China. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the Communist Party and the military is kind of like the same organization, so it's a little hard to say that one's in charge of the other.
That corruption. You know what they're doing right now? The military in China, that's what I was going to talk about this morning.
Okay,
the military in China are kidnapping so many innocent Chinese and people from all over the world, and they put them in prison, and then they're selling the body parts for organs while they're alive. They take their organs. These people haven't died. And they're selling, they're making so much money. And Planned Parenthood is with China, too. That's what I was going to tell you this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2016, Planned Parenthood sold $528 million worth of baby body parts to China. And the military from China, it's so corrupt, so corrupt. But Xi is trying to get rid of the corruption in China, and Putin is trying to get rid of the corruption in Russia. That's what's going on, and you're going to hear about it. So China's going to have to collapse, and it will collapse. This guy was telling us last night, one of these programs that I watch, and he was saying that President Trump is working with both presidents. And I knew that before, but this guy kind of like confirmed it last night. I said, "Oh, wow, he's telling it to everybody."
Who's
so
this guy?
Is
this a video or is this?
I'll send you the video. He's in this. What's his name? John Adams. Mike Adams show, you know. And he had him as a guest. Very, very good. Very good.
You mean Scott Adams or Mike Adams?
Mike Adams. Yeah, I'll send it to you because usually they
so
don't
now Mike Adams is the head of Natural News. He's been a journalist for a long time, and he some of his stuff is totally off the wall, and some of it's very good. He was right on with COVID, but he also is a very much of a world government, you know, on the crazy end of the world government, extreme, you know, globalist, as opposed
to.
Well,
he has his own lab to test all this stuff too, and he comes out with a lot of good stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, he had this guest, and I'll send it to you.
It seems that when someone makes a video, there's always, because I get these videos all the time. People send me, I probably get like 50 a day. I get a ridiculous amount of videos.
Well, a lot of times I send you one and say, you must watch this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you're one of 50 people a day who are sending me videos. You send me one video, and I get a lot of videos. And so, I mean, I do watch some of them, but I have to be very selective.
Yeah.
It's always, that's always a question. But the thing is, there's something about a video that people think if it's in a video, it must be true. You sent me a video. Can we talk about that one? One from the weekend?
I don't know.
Okay, sovereign state citizen video.
If you want, I'm not going to get into it though because I know what's going on and you don't. So.
And I don't. Okay.
Yeah.
So see, I don't know how to characterize this, but it's you're dismissing what I'm saying because you know things that I don't. So therefore, my opinion that what you think is not. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Because this is very important. This happens all the time. Happens to me. It happens to different people on different networks and places all over the place. That someone will say, you don't know what I know. Therefore, I mean, McCarthy did this and he was wrong. He said there are 56 communists. You know, he was wrong about some stuff, but he's right about the communists. But anyway, this tactic. It's a tactic. You don't know what I know. Therefore, you're wrong. Okay, that's not valid. That's not a valid argument. It's not a valid argument.
Then. Right. You
but I can't investigate
before you start
because it's a secret.
That it's a fraud. That it's this. Nah. You know what I mean?
Chelsea, it's an intellectual trap. It's an intellectual trap because you say you know what I don't know, therefore you're right and I'm wrong because I don't know. But you can't tell me what I don't know because it's a secret. You see the trap? So I can't win.
It's not a secret. No,
sure
it's not a secret.
Yeah,
the state national is not a secret. It's been going on.
Well, that's not a secret.
30, 40
years but the return of Trump working with Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, which I find hysterical, actually.
Oh yes. true. Yeah, that's going to be true.
Why is it true?
People are going to be like,
are they,
because it is true.
Are they like chatting on the phone? Are they doing like a Zoom or something or what?
No, Trump is working with Xi and he's working with Putin. That's what we were told. And
why? Okay, so okay, logic and reason filter.
A lot of people know about it.
Okay, I'm glad they do. Let's go through the logic. Let's go through the Action Radio logic and reason filter. Why would Trump, who put huge tariffs on Xi Jinping and China for their unfair trade practices, you know, why when Trump put huge sanctions on Vladimir Putin, why after all the things that they did to make our country great and those countries back in their place, why, you know, would Trump work with those two?
Well, what's happening is that these countries they have been so corrupt by this criminal, like what we have here. These criminals are corrupt. So a president gets in, and the president becomes so corrupt in order to blend in order not to be murdered. And the reason they killed JFK, because he disagreed with what they were doing. And so is Martin Luther King, they murdered him too. Because he disagreed of this child trafficking that has been going on for years and years and years.
Okay, but you haven't answered my question. You haven't answered my question. Why?
Okay, so I'm getting there.
Okay.
So the corruption in Russia with the communists, Putin doesn't want that. And so is China. They're torturing innocent people. They're selling their organs. They're doing so many bad things in China. And she doesn't want that. And that's why he's working with President Trump. And they already have rescued so many innocent children in Ukraine from the child trafficking. And they haven't destroyed all the bioweapon labs yet, only 35 in Ukraine. But there's a total of 46. And the State Department assured that there were 46. But, of course, they didn't call it bioweapon because they don't want to scare people. But the rest of the labs, Russia hasn't destroyed because they're too dangerous to destroy right now.
Mm-hmm. So here's the question.
To the Ukrainian people.
Xi Jinping is the dictator of China. He is the head of the Communist Party. He has absolute power in China. If he wanted to do anything, he could.
He doesn't.
I mean, he doesn't have absolute power.
He doesn't.
Who does?
He doesn't have the power.
Who does?
Mm-mm.
Who does?
He does not have the power. Xi.
Who does?
No.
So who does?
The mafia.
One more time.
Look. I'm just
the
giving
mafia?
You an example. Like the radical criminals that we have here.
Right.
I'm just giving you an example.
Okay.
The Democrats have been in power of every president in this country. And that's
mm-hmm.
exactly what's happening in Russia. That's exactly what's happening in China. And that's exactly what's been happening in the Philippines, Thailand, Taiwan. Same thing. Exactly. They're running.
Yes,
the show.
I disagree with that
not
because you look at Putin's KGB, so he's secret police. You know, Brandon's being supported by our intelligence, which are basically secret police. Most of these governments are supported by their secret police force, who tends to assassinate any opposition. That's how they stay in power. Now, granted that the mm-hmm. dictators, even Kim Jong-il, who has like tons of power, is limited by the fact that there's always somebody that wants that power and are willing to kill him to get it. So everybody's an enemy to him. Same thing with Xi Jinping. He's limited by what he can do. He has to maintain the Communist Party line or some other communist is going to take his power, probably by assassination. So that's the danger of the dictatorship. But you haven't given me a reason yet.
Let me give you another example, Greg.
Okay, one more. Then I think Mike's on the line. Go ahead.
Look at right now, Greg. Why did they hate Trump? Why did they want to murder over 30 times? Well, excuse me, 30 times they have tried to murder Donald Trump. Why? Because Donald Trump is not in their level. He disagrees with all the corruption that's been going on. And every president that comes in America, they go along with the program. They all become corrupt. No.
Mm-hmm.
Look
no,
at
I
the
agree
bullshit.
With that. See, here's what's interesting about this is why
That's exactly what's happening.
All right, but this is why I continue this dialogue, because you make a lot of sense. You make perfectly logical sense. Your description of communism is right on. Your analysis is right on. Your analysis of the border, the cartels and the Mexican border is right on. And then you cross this line. And I can always tell where it is, but
okay.
You cross this line into the plan. This is going to happen. The military intelligence are running the country. There's a coalition of Putin, you know, Xi Jinping and Trump. And that's where you cross this line into fantasy land, as far as I'm concerned. you know, you've got the right analysis, but you've got the wrong conclusion. And the reason that I discuss this so carefully is because there are millions of people that believe exactly as you do and are convinced you're absolutely right. The intellectual trap is you say you have a secret and I'm wrong because I don't know the secret, but you can't tell me the secret.
Well, it's not
you know?
A secret. It's
okay,
not
but
a secret,
you
but
can't tell me the plan. There's a plan, but you can't tell me what it is.
I can because you don't tell the, you don't tell the killers the plan. You don't.
But there
that's
is,
what they
yeah,
tell
I
us.
I know that's what they tell you.
The puzzle, but
they
they're not telling us what day is going to happen, when are they coming. You know what I mean? They're not telling us that, but we know
so
that
you don't
a lot
think,
is going to happen. Donald,
you don't think with an FBI, secret police, KGB, Justice Department that has the NSA and all the spies they have and all the leaks that are going on between Republicans and Democrats, and all, you don't think that these folks, that the your so-called enemy knows exactly what's going on? You don't think for a second they don't know? The only people that don't know are the American people. That's the, that's who you're keeping the secret from, and we're supposed to make the decision. But
I'm
the idea that the enemies don't know.
I'm sure Obama knows exactly what's going on, and that's why he's desperate to get rid of Donald Trump. They want to arrest Donald Trump. And,
I know they do.
We think, we don't know if it's true, we think that they're going to allow for Trump to be arrested in order for the military to just do their thing. But
yeah, the military's not going to do their thing because that's illegal in a free country. Anyway,
no,
let me hold you up. This,
not,
is, this is a great
not,
discussion, though.
The military has to step in and save America. That's exactly what's going to happen.
I do not want to replace a Marxist dictatorship with a military dictatorship.
No, just,
that is the worst.
Just,
first of all, it's unconstitutional, so it can't happen. It can't happen. It can't, Josie. It can't happen. You're talking treason.
Okay.
Military dictatorship is treason.
No.
Look at the places where it hasn't worked out, like everywhere. Okay, tell you what. Hang on the line. Do you want to give a plug for your business or anything? Any contact information? I'll get to Mike.
Ruth Uniform Shop. I'm on Olive Road, and I get all the information from all the nurses all the time. So if you have anything to share, come and tell us.
Yeah, that actually is a great source of information. Now, this is why I love talking to you, because, like I say, a lot of folks believe exactly as you do. So I want to, you know, air the differences between our two positions. That's why I do it. That's why I take a lot
and
of time
JFK,
on this. I think
JFK, he's coming out with his magazine. George is coming out, I believe, on the 22nd of this month. It's gonna
Can't
be
wait.
Out.
Can't wait.
Yep.
Thanks, Josie.
Yep.
Let me play a couple things, and
okay,
we'll get to Mike Clinch, who is back and making his second appearance on Action Radio. He actually is brave enough to come back a second time, which is kind of cool. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well, so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network. the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. See all the fun we have here? Let's welcome back a returning guest who was running for the Board of County Commissioners here in Santa Rosa County, Florida, Mike Lynch. Hey,
wow.
How you been? How you doing?
That's great. That's great applause. I haven't heard that since I walked into the classroom years ago. That's like wonderful.
That's
kind of
crazy. Students are applauding you. That's a good thing. Yeah. No, I got buttons.
I love.
Go ahead.
I love teaching. I miss it. I really do miss it. So
why don't you do it again?
I'm back at the beginning.
Why don't you teach again?
You know, I thought about it. I really have thought about it. Actually, Dr. Barber, back in the summer, early spring when I was running, I had an interview with her, and she asked me if I wanted to come teach. And I said, oh, I don't know. You know, it's I do miss the kids. I do miss middle school. I'm a glutton for punishment. Middle school is great.
That's
because,
a tough age,
well, no,
because a lot of transitions go on. You know, you got young people becoming young adults. You know, those are important years. Yeah.
Well, and when the teacher tends to be like a young person too, the kids relate. I mean, I used to chase my kids around the room with a lightsaber. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that you've got to have a gimmick. You've got to have a hook. To be a successful middle-level educator, you've got to be able to get kids to laugh. They have to be able to come in that door. Don't get me wrong. They need to learn, but they need to first
walk through the door. This is actually really important because, you know, when I was teaching my own daughter stuff, and we'd have endless debates and endless conversations, and I'd give her these moral dilemmas where there was no right answer, you know, and just to make her think, you know, and we did stuff like that all the time.
Yeah.
But it was always with humor. And humor, you know, the biggest problem with classrooms is that they're boring. Teachers are boring. You know, the good teachers didn't bore you, but the humorous ones, the ones that were engaged, that were entertaining, I think that's left out of education. But here's something you might think about, too. I can see where you wouldn't want to go back into a regular classroom under the Department of Education, local department, state department, federal department. But what you could do is start a consulting business and hire yourself out at a reduced rate because, you know, if we're doing a good cause, maybe, to homeschools. So to homeschool parents, groups of homeschool parents, things like that. So you could teach, or you could even have your own little classroom. You could rent a classroom or something like that. But I think it'd be better to go to the homeschools themselves as a homeschool tutor, you know, taking all the years you have. You've got the experience.
Yeah.
Why not?
I was a science teacher, and I thought what would be interesting would be storefront science. In other words, you could have a schedule where homeschoolers – could come in, you could have an elementary, a middle, and a high school curriculum and do science for the kids a couple days a week. Maybe one group comes on Monday, Wednesday, and another group comes Tuesday, Thursday. And
that's a really good idea. But how about a one-room schoolhouse?
I
love the idea of one rooms where the older kids are teaching the younger kids. And the reason I like that is because the only way you really know something is when you teach it to somebody else and they actually learn it and can understand it. So I would abolish. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. That's something I had not thought about, was having co-op learning between the elementary, middle, and high school. That's an excellent idea, Greg. I never even thought of that. That would be a way. But I would call it that.
No, I love that idea, but I need to send you my article. I wrote a completely new model for education. It's a 14,000-word article where I trace the original systems from, the Arab systems, the Egyptian, the Greek, the Roman, you know, the Middle Ages, you know, up through the one-room schoolhouse, up to the factory model that we have today, through the Prussian model, to everything else. And one of the things that came about was I got rid of normal grades and things like that, and had what I call certificates of mastery. So the parents and the kids would design their own education based on the things that they wanted to master, and they would accumulate certificates. And the whole point of it was that you didn't have grades or exams or fill in the dots. You had, you know, the older kids teaching younger kids the subject. So not only would the younger kids learn, but the older kids would prove that they mastered the subject by being able to teach it, and the younger kids understand. And that's how you earned your certificate.
Well, yeah.
So this isn't this something I've actually thought about a bit. Go ahead.
We've had that in trades. We've
mm-hmm.
had that in colleges
yeah,
with undergraduate
mm-hmm.
undergrad ass assistants, as we call them. You know, we've had that. This has existed for decades
mm-hmm.
and hundreds of years. I mean, how did the Masons? I hate to say that, I'm Masonic, but when you
What's
talk
the Masons?
About craft.
I don't know
oh, nothing,
Mason.
Nothing. I'm actually,
I don't
I'm
Mason.
Actually a third degree. Yeah.
Well, let's.
We
need to talk about that. Well, let's talk about that for a minute. What is this fascination people have that the Masons are going to take over the world? There's some bizarre secret society. Most of our founders were Masons. Masons start off as stone
yeah.
Masons. They put stones together. That's what a Mason is.
And they don't. People try to look for an ulterior motive in everything. They have to think, like, I could see people thinking I was trying to teach kids something nefarious if I had my storefront science. I'm sure there would be people teaching them, you know, terrorist things or whatever. I know that would happen. Because
yeah,
there's
be
people like
Masons.
That out there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he's a Mason, too. Oh, my God. Yeah, I can hear it now.
Well, if you called it E pluribus unum science and you had a pyramid with an eye on top of it, yeah, they might suspect you. But until then, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. And the compass and the square. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
That's
yeah.
evil.
Yeah, what is
I'm
it?
I'm sorry. I'm laughing.
No, I'm laughing, too. What is the plumb bob, the compass, and the square? There's like three things, aren't there?
Yeah.
That make up the
yeah,
Mason sign?
The square, yeah. the compass, and the plumb bob, and all three of them guiding the Masonic order and what it stands for. Now, I've not been to a meeting in years.
Well, now,
because
can
I've
you reveal the symbolism of that? I mean, the plumb bob keeps things level. The square is how you get square corners, square buildings, square bricks. The compass has angles. You know, so you've got angles, squares, and level. What's the big mystery?
Yeah, in terms of directing, accomplishing things, I think the one thing let me go back.
Mm-hmm.
My family, my uncle was Grand Commander of the Knights Templar. In other words, the top organization in Masonic order. He was
mm-hmm.
for the entire United States.
Hmm.
He was Grand Commander for the whole thing.
Wow.
And my family, they actually, when my uncle passed away, we gave back all of his Masonic certificates, everything he had, going all the way back to Gerald Ford. He
hmm.
knew Gerald Ford personally.
Wow.
You know, and was really involved with that. So there's a lot of history and such involved in the Masonic order, and a lot of people don't know it. Because
well, we should do a show on it. Let's have you back and do a show on the Masonic Order. And the conspiracy folks
well,
can come out and raise the questions. It'd be great. Come on, it'd be fun.
There's more. I worry more about. Let me tell you what. You want to know about conspiracy theory? Run for public office. Okay?
Let's talk about that. So give us some background so the folks that didn't hear you the first time and know who you are and what you did. So go ahead. Tell
that
story.
I was a public school teacher for 25 years outside of St. Louis. I was mayor of the town of Moscow Mills, Missouri, for a total of 7 years. My father was a public school teacher for 34 years, and he was a public official for 30 years. And I grew up a stone's throw from Ferguson. So I have a lot of interesting background and so forth in both public education, and I come by the municipal government thing honestly. And,
wait a minute.
That's what got
you might know
me
my caller, Pianchi. Hey, Pianchi, do you know Mike? Because you guys are both St. Louis.
Oh.
Yeah, what school district are you teaching?
Fort Zumwalt out in St. Charles. Yeah,
yeah,
it's right just west of St. Louis.
Well, I like Fort Zumwalt because they said they didn't want city kids coming out there when those school districts that they was in was failing. I think that's where they came from should have corrected the problem. You know, that was brought about by Lacey Clay when he was in the Missouri.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole nother kettle of fish that you could get into, and I'm not prepared to do that today. But what I can tell you is that There's a long history of that, and Greg, you would need an hour or two just to talk about that issue.
We see, and I don't know anything about it, but I know that as soon as the St. Louis, you know, I was thinking that maybe you and Pianki had a common base, common knowledge, common something, you know, where you knew like, you know, like this thing. I don't know anything about
it.
Yeah,
he is correct in terms of what Lacy Clay was doing, and so on when they redid. He was the original. Legislator, original member of Congress, congressman from the first district, which was St. Louis City and North St. Louis County.
Okay.
And it was redistricted in 84, 88. They redrew, I can't remember. No, it's every 10 years. So it would have been 90, I think, that they redrew the districts. So, and there was a lot going on in St. Louis, but believe me, it would be a long thing to talk about. I mean, it's a whole separate
show. Okay, we'll do another time.
We
got two more shows for you. All right. We got actually three shows, a public education show, we got a Mason show, and we've got a St. Louis show. That's okay. Pianki?
But, you know, another thing I like about Fort Mill Wall, wasn't it that school district when they found a discrepancy, the taxpayers found a discrepancy, they fired the superintendent and got rid of the whole board at one time, you know, some years ago?
I'm trying to remember now. If you mean in my former district, I don't recall us ever having. Now I know there was an issue with the tax levy, but there wasn't, as far as I know, there was nobody that in the Fort Zumwalt school district that did that. Now I realize in the Riverview district, there was some in the Riverview district.
I want to get back on topic here. So how'd you end up here in Florida, and why didn't you run for school board? Why did you run for county commissioner? Just out of curiosity.
Well, let's see. Let's back up. I left mayor in February of 2018 because my wife got diagnosed the first time with breast cancer. She's had it twice.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh.
So she went well, but we're very good. She gets regular diagnostic mammograms every 6 months, and she's no evidence of disease, as they say.
Okay,
you're never
good.
Really cured from breast cancer.
Yeah, well, you got to keep checking, yeah.
So she wanted to move down here to be close to the shore. One of her bucket list things to be near the beach. We're three blocks from the beach here in Navarre.
Good.
So moved down here. I retired. I left teaching. Well, I'd left teaching before then, but I left the mayor's thing. I didn't run again. I came down here. Part of my life has always been being involved in the public sector, being involved in teaching, being involved in the community. You know, my dad said, don't just make a living, make a difference. And
I got to adopt that. We got to incorporate that in Action Radio. I'll give you credit for it. But don't make a living, make a difference.
Yeah.
And that's what the show's about. Now, do I intend to make a great living? Absolutely. But I know we're going to make it much more of a difference by the virtue of our citizen legislature. Yeah.
And that's why I decided to get involved. I got involved with the Preserve Navarre, the movement towards incorporation.
Where's Navarre?
And I got involved.
Folks that in Azerbaijan that don't know where we're talking about.
Basically, what we're talking about is we sit between Gulf Breeze and Fort Walton Beach. As you come
Florida
down Highway 90.
This is the Florida Panhandle.
Right,
we're the second county in. But we've got a growing audience in Canada, Australia, and England. And because they want freedom. So as we talk about freedom and bills and things like
they
that,
want to come in.
That's growing.
Pay.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
But here's part of the reason why I got involved. I started looking at things like taxes and things like that in this community. Santa Rosa County has got a real serious issue. Mm-hmm. We rely way too much on real estate taxes and not enough on other forms like sales taxes. We have an issue.
That's interesting.
We have an issue. Well, if you look at the tax, I did all this for the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We 60 to 67% of this county's operating revenue comes from real estate tax. Now, if
is that property tax?
It,
is that the same thing as property tax?
Yes, property tax.
Okay.
Add the
law. Just want to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, and it's I personally think that relying too much on real estate tax is a fool's errand. And here's why.
Well, here's the problem. Well, I think what you're going to say. Yeah, go ahead. You say it first.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Property going up and down, the fluctuations in value, when you look at the history of taxes in Santa Rosa County, in 2008 when the mortgage crisis hit and values just went through the floor, now values are going down again because of interest rates going up. So what happens is you don't get a steady stream of revenue. It's up, down, sideways. you're always trying to play catch up. What you do is what I've theorized is you do a two-part thing. Don't okay. shoot me yet. Wait till I'm done.
Oh no, I'm not. Feel free.
You propose a half cent loss, you know, local option sales tax, only to go to infrastructure, roads, sewers, water, things like that. What you do at the same time is you tie that to a rollback of the property tax, say like 0.1 mil or 1 mil or whatever. So what you do is you provide the property owners with a tax break. At the same time, you have that sales tax bringing in money to infrastructure. And that also, I hate to say it, but that's going to have the tourists help pay. And because right now they don't. I mean, the bed tax is kind of a joke. It really only goes to two or three different things, and they it would be nice for them
tax?
To when they
what's a bed tax?
The
so
bed tax.
Folks know.
It is a tax established by the county that people pay when they stay at hotels, RV campsites, and
yeah, we call
like
that hotel tax in California. Yeah,
value added tax.
Well, that's different. A value added tax is different. That's a different tax.
Is it like a value added? Is like a sales tax.
Yeah, but it's also in lieu of tipping. Like in European countries, they always have that. And that goes to tipping. That's why you don't tip in Europe, because they've already added 15% to your bill. Americans don't know
that,
so they tip too much. Yeah, that's why Europeans don't tip. Oh, what'd you learn? Go ahead. Tell
me. I went to France. But anyway, my
idea. Where'd you go? Where'd you go?
Paris. We went to Paris.
Paris?
My wife.
Did you climb the Eiffel Tower?
That was her bucket list. Yes, I went up in the Eiffel Tower. I didn't go all the way. I went up to the second level.
You can't anymore.
Yeah, they're doing a bunch of renovations around the entire park there. So it was very – I enjoyed the Louvre. But anyway, back to what I was saying. When we talk about
– I love Paris. I'm sorry. I have a fabulous time there.
Oh, no, that's okay. When we talk about taxes in Santa Rosa County, you know, we don't have the same tax base as, say, Okaloosa and Escambia. And as a result, the property owners are paying more than I believe they do in other counties, and we need to change that. We need to get that switch. Like, that's why I said, if you do a loss, but then have a balance of that by giving the folks back some revenue, by giving them a break.
So, you're transferring the tax, but in other words, you don't need more tax. Well, of course, governments always want more tax revenue, but you're basically transferring where it comes from. So you're taking it from the real estate and putting – now, of course, you know, for the renters out there, you might want to have something that property tax, you know, people should be encouraged to reduce the rent by the appropriate amount, you know, for renters. But that's a market thing. Yeah, you can't really require that. But it's just – it's something interesting that that the owner, property owners might get a little break. Now, here's the problem I saw. The problem I saw with that, with having 60% come from real estate, is that the pressure to develop the county is so great. We've got housing booms going on all over the place. And just to let folks know where we are. So hold on just a second. Santa Rosa County is in the very top of the Florida Panhandle. So to the west of us is Escambia. To the east of us is Okaloosa. So those are the counties that Mike mentioned just a minute ago. So the three of us here, there's only 10 counties in the Panhandle. We're like a different world. We're our own little enclave here. We're different than the rest of Florida, which is basically New York, New Jersey transplants, and various art colonies and things like that. But the Panhandle is different. We're in Central Time, and we're near Pensacola, which is our reference point. We've got the Blue Angels, highly military area, both veterans and active duty. It's a very interesting place. I love it here. I mean, I do. But it's unique. But the problem in Santa Rosa County particularly is this idea there's no growth plan. That's something I want to talk to you about here in a minute. There's no growth plan.
Yeah.
You know, so if they're making their money on real estate taxes, the incentive is to have more real estate.
Well, and here's my point on this. Mm-hmm. If you fail the plan, you plan to fail. And I think what happened was 20, 30 years ago when my sister moved down here, she and my brother-in-law are both retired lieutenant colonels. He flew the SR. She flew with the Hurricane Hunters. I heard your pilot commercial earlier. So
the
Air Force kind of brings me. Yeah. And anyway, I digress. The point is, because of the military and everything else, we don't seem to have as much economic development that goes along the lines of generating sales tax revenue or generating revenue from commercial real estate.
Why wouldn't we generate sales tax? Military makes a good living, sort of. But I mean, it's a steady income. You know, we don't have, you know, why wouldn't that generate sales tax?
And I'm not sure why. I think partially because on the bases, I know that there's like, no, they don't do a tax or they're tax free. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly what it is. But when you
military?
Look at us.
Well, on the bases, maybe. That's a problem.
Yeah, on the bases, the base exchange. The
right.
When you look at Santa Rosa County, we're, you know, we do have a little bit of Eglin coming in on the northwest corner, northeast corner. But then
that is one of the
across,
biggest Air Force bases in the world for folks that want to
in the world.
Scale.
Exactly.
Eglin's huge. It's probably like Bagram
in
Afghanistan, which we gave away. But this is a massive Air Force base.
And I think what we have to think is that, you know, we don't need to be a one or two trick pony. By that, I mean we rely on the military or we rely on tourism. I think we need to rely more on tourism. I think doing that sales
What about a third option?
In,
what about a third option?
I don't
Why
know
don't
what
do,
a third option would be.
Well, let's think about it for a second. How about a cybersecurity industry? How about artificial intelligence?
Oh,
How about you know, specialists in computer, I don't know, graphics? But in other words, why don't we develop something special that's unique to us? Why are we relying on the military and tourism?
I think we should have had Space Force here instead of Eglin. I don't know how
here
that
where?
Decision was made by the,
here
like in Santa Rosa County, like Hurlburt, or just across the border.
So you're still thinking military spending. I'm talking about commercial spending. What have we got here that nobody else has? We've got a Gulf. Okay, we got shrimp.
Yep.
Didn't you guys see, what's his name? Was that Tom Hanks? I'm getting it right now.
Oh, Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump, thank you.
Were you talking about?
You know,
Gump?
So we got shrimp,
yeah.
Right? We got a bay. We've got tourism. We've got water. We've got
now,
rivers.
Wait a minute.
We've got lakes. We've got the Gulf. We got stuff.
I agree.
What?
This is a whole nother kettle of fish. Pardon the pun.
Okay. Do we have oil? Do we have oil offshore?
No, we don't. Not near shore. Not that I'm aware of.
I'm just curious.
But what I'm talking about is there's another thing called the pass. That means moving out from Navarre out to the Gulf. You know, you have to go to Destin to get out, or you have to go to Pensacola to get out.
So you're talking about
but
by water?
No way to get...
We need to do a little translation here for folks that aren't. So you gotta remember the local listeners are a small portion of our audience. I wish it were bigger, but you know, so we're talking about a waterway that needs to go from where to where?
The Santa Rosa Sound.
Right.
Yeah, the Santa Rosa Sound goes east to west.
Right.
It exists between Navarre and the other cities and the Gulf of Mexico. And it actually has a two-lane road that goes from Fort Pickens all the way down along the Gulf Coast. The thing is, there's no way for people that are in the Sound, in order to get out to the Gulf of Mexico, that means charter fishing and everything, you can either go through Destin or Pensacola. There is no other direct route out to the Gulf in this area. And if you look at a map, it's basically a strip of water that, what would you say, 75 miles?
So what do you want to do with it, though, in the interest of time? What do you want to do with this strip of water?
It would be to open that up to the Gulf. They did it in the 60s, I remember, if I remember correctly.
So what's the opposition to it? What's the problem with it now? I'm trying to make sense of it.
Partly the military. Yeah, partly people are fearing that Navarre is going to become Destin West. And I think that's a little hyperbolic. I don't think you're going to see suddenly 20-story condos go up. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay, well, let's talk about that in terms of a growth plan. Okay, so the biggest issue, and I wrote a big management plan for Santa Rosa County, so let's get into this. And I know you ran for commissioner. We need to talk about that a little bit too. My idea is that you've got to stop growth right now. Just stop all these housing developments until you know where we are. So you put a moratorium on all housing development until we figure this out. You've got to set aside land for open space or it's going to be gone. Okay. You got to set aside farm. You got to set aside farmland or it's going to be gone. Okay. You've got to manage your infrastructure or it's going to be impossible to do anything here. You've got to preserve. We have a historic district in downtown Milton. Milton's, you know, kind of like the big city of Santa, and it's not a big city. We don't have a huge population, but Milton has a historic district and these morons want to put a super highway through it. Idiots.
And Milton,
so you got to preserve that.
I proposed that while I was running. I made certain that I talked to the folks in Milton to turn Milton into a historic river town and have
tell
it.
Me about
there's
that.
Another area.
I think we were going to agree
when
on this, but go ahead and tell me about it.
When you look at Milton, and you look at the way it's set up, there is a town outside of St. Louis called St. Charles, Missouri, which was a river town where Lewis and Clark began the exploration west. You could do – Milton is almost exactly the same setup. It's smaller, but you could still have storefronts. You could still have antique shops. You could say – have Alyssa's open up a big shop down there on Willing Street and the whole area. It could be, you could have riverboat tours going up the Black River and
coming back.
Well,
that's exactly what I proposed. I mean, but it doesn't have to be just some of the big businesses. We need new business. We've got this whole – for folks that don't know, the Caroline Street is the main street that runs east and west. It's got my favorite Imogene Theater, 1912 Theater, you know, same year as the Titanic. We've got a courthouse across the street that's now closed because we have a new courthouse. Well, that can be like – Pike Place Market in Seattle, smaller version, can be like the Ferry Building in San Francisco, Boston Market, San Antonio Riverwalk, is all these different things. You can turn that into, you know, the Crazy Hat Shop, gourmet food places and restaurants.
Okay? Antique shops.
And it's right across from the Amphitheater, Theater, and we have free band concerts, you know, 16 weeks of the year. We got 8 in the spring and 8 in the fall.
Encourage
we have free band concerts.
Like encourage things like sidewalk cafes. Things like that.
Well, sure.
And then
we've got an entire boardwalk on the river where boats dock. You know, we've got this incredible potential here. And I don't know what the hell's going on with the city council in Milton or the county commissioners, why they're not developing this and encouraging. I mean, I would say, you know, tax-free for 10 years, something. But there are a bunch of empty stores on Willing Street.
I would have supported that if I had continued my campaign and actually
what
won.
What happened? Why didn't you? What happened to your campaign?
Let's put it this way. Campaigns take money. And I was not prepared to – I had several people suggest I should take out a loan. Well, I wasn't going to do that.
No. Don't do that.
Say, I do love my wife. So that was definitely a no-go.
Did she say no? And you said yes, dear? I mean, what happened?
It was kind of a – no, there wasn't – just the look. We all know the look.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Should we put her on or am I going to get the look too?
No. She's babysitting. We have a three-month-old we're babysitting.
Okay.
So
you don't have to give out all your personal information, just to let you know, because this is podcast forever. So I just want to, you know, give you a little clarification in case. Okay, that's fine. All right. So what happened in the campaign?
There wasn't money. Money, I refused to take money from developers. Several of the other candidates did or have. And I'm not
going
to be
a public information on that. Would you like to reveal any public information on the candidates and how much they were receiving contributions from the development community?
I don't have that list in front of me. I'm having some internet issues today. I can tell you that several of the candidates did accept outside the state developer money, and some of that money they returned later. But
isn't that
after
special? They returned it later.
Yeah.
You got cut off for a second. Okay. So how much money are we talking about? How much money were these candidates taking in?
I think it was in the $5,000 to $10,000 range. Again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I don't want to quote wrong.
No, ballpark's fine, as long as we get an idea how corrupt these people are, you know, and how much they're taking from developers.
Yeah, I wasn't going to do that. I found
I can say it.
Some
my show. I can say anything I want. It's okay. Yeah.
Several of the larger merchants who I thought were – along my way of thinking or agreed with me in some points, didn't come through like I thought they would. So as a result, it came to qualifying time, and I was not going to put myself in debt to run for public office. I've held public office. I've been there. You don't do it for the money. Okay, that's not what this is about. And I decided, you know what, I can't do this. And I thought it would be disingenuous of me to run around begging just to get on the ballot. And now we've seen what happened, that one write-in candidate dropped the last day. So now everybody in the 4th District, Ray Eddington and Dave Peace, who are still on the ballot, have to go all the way to November now to wait for the election, which means it's a convoluted mess. And I just decided
it wasn't Republicans and Democrats running for that county seat, county commission seat?
Only Republicans. Only Republicans.
Both Republicans.
But see, the way I understand it is now since the if I read the law correctly, if I'm doing the statute correctly, when nobody else runs, that person who dropped out as a write-in, then anybody can vote either ballot, Democrat or Republican, in November. So you can get Democrat votes. That's the way I'm understanding what's going on, which might or might not be the case. But that's
generally, you can, people can vote for whoever they want. But I'm just interested if the two Republicans on the ballot, like California has this ridiculous open primary mm-hmm. stupidity where they take the top two candidates. So you basically have two Democrats running against each other for most of the state offices in California because they were the top two vote getters,
right.
as opposed to the top Republican
right.
and the top Democrat. So that's why
mm-hmm.
that's how the Republicans get shut out. So election law is interesting. Okay. So
in Florida, it's kind of crazy. So anyway, I didn't have the money, so I decided to withdraw.
Right.
I wasn't gonna.
Have an idea before you started the campaign how much money you might need?
I figured it would be between $10,000 to $20,000.
You don't have
there.
To tell me, but I was just curious. But wouldn't that be part of the planning, deciding to run, to figure out how much money it's going to take to do things? So you got to figure, you got media advertising, you got posters, you've got things like that.
I've
well, that's why I had you on the show. Hey, you got a free hour on Action Radio, dude. You know, I hope that podcast went everywhere.
Believe me, it was not the best choice, but it was the right choice. I think there's a difference.
Or come on Action Radio.
Oh, no, to get out of the campaign.
I just want to check.
It would have been disingenuous of me, yeah. I think mm-hmm. it would have been disingenuous of me because I just wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to hold people up, you know, practically holding a gun to their head to get them to contribute. I wasn't going to do that.
Now you can contribute. Now you can contribute as a citizen legislator. You don't have to be in politics. This idea that elective office is the only place you can have an impact is crazy. I refuse to ever run for office. Because it's too much of a limitation. I get to write bills for every level of government. I get to talk to people that are writing bills for every level of government. Pianchi's on the line still.
Mm-hmm.
He writes bills. You know, so the impact that we can have so far exceeds what I could do as an elected official. If you're elected to office, say you're elected to Congress or any of the state legislatures, you're beholden to your party.
Mm-hmm.
You're not independent anymore. You can't think for yourself. You carry the party line.
I try to – my – to me, having been a mayor and an alderman and then looking at a county commissioner, to mm-hmm. me, that's still a local issue position. In other
right.
words, 80% of what you're going to deal with is going to be a local issue, streets, roads, working with the sewer and water companies,
mm-hmm.
FDOT, things like that. And
that's
where
my Department of Transportation, for those that don't know
right.
FDOT. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. I won a $3.1 million safety grant for my former community. We had like five people killed on our major highway in like 6 months. So we went out and lobbied and wrote and got a $3.1 mm-hmm. million safety grant to put in 9 miles of cable safety barrier.
Hmm.
And, you know, that's the kind of thing I enjoy doing. That kind of policy show, it's visible. People can
mm-hmm.
see you accomplish something and keeping people safe.
Yeah.
And that's
I sent you a bill that's not quite as visible, but it's going to have a huge impact, and that's our illegal alien-free zone bill, where we create an illegal alien-free zone in Santa Rosa County by using civil asset forfeiture. And this is new. This is an Action Radio original, idea to use civil
mm-hmm.
asset forfeiture to take the property of any illegal alien who's illegally in the country in our county. So we take their stuff, make it impossible for them to live here, and when that stuff is sold, the proceeds go back to the taxpayers. So there's no incentive government to make money on it. Go ahead.
I don't think they should be allowed to register their kids in public school.
Well, that's part of the bill. That's part of the bill, by the way.
That was something that stuck out at me, is that we cannot expect that somebody, was it in Texas? There is a school district that has like 1,000 new kids, and they all don't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
Texas
should refuse to let those kids in their schools.
How can you? I'm imagining as a middle school science teacher, I have a classroom
mm-hmm.
with 25 eighth graders, and half of them are Latino who don't speak English or who don't understand
teach
language.
Them. Don't
and
teach them.
That's what I'm saying.
Go to your principal and say, I'm not going to have kids in my class that aren't U.S. citizens because the taxpayers are paying for the education of U.S. citizens. Where's the teacher rebellion?
Yeah,
where's the principal rebellion?
Where are the
school board rebellions? Now, Pianchi, I know, is listening. He's just waiting to comment. I know he's going to
mm-hmm.
jump in here too. Where is the state of Texas rebellion against this? There's no reason for them to be educating any illegal aliens in their schools.
The NEA and the AFT.
I don't care.
Yeah.
They don't make laws.
I know. They have
They're a lobbying
group. I know
group.
They don't, but they, I agree.
They have power.
They have their
so
heads
take
in the lobby.
Their power
yeah.
away. Now,
but we don't.
Let me see if you know.
We allow them. I left NEA years
ago. But if you have this bill, if enough people get mad
you know
enough to pass our illegal alien bill, what's that, Jackie?
Both y'all talking at the same time. Nobody can understand either one of them.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry. Good. Thanks for pointing that out. Okay, so let's get back to illegal alien kids. Where's the state rebellion? Where? What would you do as county commissioner if you've been elected?
I would work with the well. First of all, I hate I have to work with federal authorities since this involves federal law first.
Wait. Stop. Stop right there. Does the federal government have any constitutional authority to have anything to do with education?
No. But what I'm talking about is the interim between the border and us.
Hold up. What does the bill talk about? Does it talk about immigration reform? Does it talk about ICE? Does it talk about any kind of immigration anything?
No.
Or does it say civil asset forfeiture for taking the assets of criminals in Santa Rosa County? I worded this very carefully for a reason.
And I agree with you. But what I'm saying is, to me, the first thing you have to do is take away the ability, or what's the term I want to use? The free services. To me, education, even though we pay for it, we're paying for their education. When they take when a child takes a seat in my class, I don't know why we are.
I know why.
We should be.
I know why.
Well, yeah, the tournament of voters. I get
nope.
it.
Nope.
I know what the...
That's not why.
What do you think of it?
Oh, I know what it is. It's the Plyler v. Doe decision of the Supreme Court. It's illegal decision. Plyler was a Texas. This is why I found it interesting you mentioned Texas. Plyler was an administrator in Texas. He said, I'm not going to teach illegal aliens. And that was the right stand to take.
Well, you know another thing.
Hold on. It went to the Supreme Court. And Brennan, one of the most liberal Marxist justices or judges actually ever to serve on the Supreme Court, Constitution says judge, not justice, ruled that American taxpayers have to give foreign aid to illegal aliens in the schools because he wanted them to grow up to be responsible citizens. That they can't order. That's ordering Americans to pay foreign aid. That's ordering Americans to use taxes, for foreign citizens that aren't allowed to be here. The Supreme Court can't order that. In fact, the Supreme Court can't order anything, quite honestly. All they can do is settle cases.
Right. Yeah.
And they settled it incorrectly.
Because Lincoln told them to take a hike. There was a decision during the Civil War. I can't remember exactly what
it
was.
Plyler v. Doe was I think, 60s.
I remember reading that. But I know that there was a decision where Lincoln had told the Supreme Court basically to take a hike.
Well, exactly. But that was Lincoln's time. That was back when in fact, Jefferson said the same thing. Go ahead and enforce it. What are you going to do? Pianki, let me get you on this here. Pianki, I think you have a comment.
One of the reasons, one entity behind that is going back to the teachers union because Americans are starting to pull their kids out of government schools, opting for choice and vouchers.
Yeah, but
these immigrants coming here, they never would be able to pull that off, at least right now. So they got to sit in those desks. When they sit in the desk, the building get paid, the teachers get paid, and the unions get their dues.
Yeah, but it's all illegal because illegal aliens can't be here. So the Supreme Court cannot require Americans to subsidize criminals. That is as unconstitutional as it gets. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the NEA and the AFT, as I said, I left the NEA years ago, they try and wield influence at the legislative level.
Right.
And we need to kind of.
So who's going to say no?
The NEA. I got
elect
the,
legislators.
Yeah, the NEA refused to support me in the two times I ran for Missouri State Legislature, even though I had been a teacher of the year. I had been a teacher of the year twice.
I don't care about that.
I had been, and I had a master's degree. I mean, I had all the credentials. All the boxes were checked.
Okay.
But the one
check. Here's what I'm getting at, though. We're talking excuses, not action. Okay, so this is
right.
We're all about action. So to say that the teachers union is powerful, I don't care. That doesn't mean anything to me. What needs to happen is that the parents need to go to the school board and say, we're not going to have you allow illegal aliens into our schools. And they say, but the Supreme Court said, And we'll, and then you say, well, that was an illegal decision. It's invalid. This is where DeSantis needs to step in. This is where the county commission needs to step in. This is when the school board. Now, hopefully we have new school board measures that have a pair that will actually stop this practice of allowing illegal aliens in our schools. And this bill that I put to the county commission would do that.
Can you recall school board members?
What's that, Bianchi?
Can you recall school board members? If you can't recall, then you got to wait till their term is out. Then the next one comes, you got to wait till their term is out.
Yeah, I don't think we have a recall. Mike, do we have a recall position? Or provision?
They are working, no. There is not, but there is a group in the area that are working on a recall measure.
Yeah, I know. I helped
and they've
write their
been
bill.
Pushing.
I know the group. Yeah. Recall Florida? Yeah, I helped write their bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's what I got more.
And then you got to make sure that some court don't come along and say, well, if they within 18 months of their election, you can't recall. So you got to put up with the mess. And you never know until you get it.
Yeah, unfortunately, right now, there's no recall right in Florida. That's part of why that little group was working. And
it doesn't matter. The school board still should be in a position. There should be pickets all around these places saying, no, we're not going to have illegal aliens. And then we just started another school year. I mean, this would have been the perfect time to do something about it.
I know.
And nobody did. And yet we've got the bill. See, we can only do so much. We write the bills, but we need other people to take the action. I'm already busy enough writing the bills. But this is the tool to stop illegal aliens being in our schools.
Well, that's a whole other issue because I wonder why school board members in the state of Florida get paid. In Missouri, you don't get paid. It's volunteer.
Well, I don't
when
want
you run
to be paid to serve in government. As long as they're serving in government, they're not serving themselves. That's the difference. Or being paid in campaign
and
contributions. But what is it about the school boards that allow illegal aliens in the schools? Why? Why do they do it?
They are simply parroting what they hear from up top.
Okay, but the Supreme Court has no power over the states. It has no power over the school districts. It has no power over the counties. They can't make decisions for them. All they can do is rule on the case. And the case they ruled incorrectly, which is enough reason for Congress to have overturned that, you know, the day after the Supreme Court issued the opinion, which they could have done. They could have recalled those judges.
Mm-hmm.
They could have impeached them and removed them. See, the problems that we have are we have the means to solve all the problems we have. We just don't have people with the will to do it. You know, that's why I come along and write these laws and hopefully inspire enough people to do something about it. I think it's coming. I think if people are really fed up. But there's no reason ever to have an illegal alien in your schools. They're not our responsibility.
I agree on that, but you also have to be able to get rid of the problem. You got two problems there. You got courts and you got school board members. And you need to be able to get rid of both of them exponentially and immediately when you have these problems because you cannot turn a child's development off or on. They don't have a switch on the back of their head.
Yeah, no, I know that. But if the county commission in Santa Rosa had adopted this bill, okay, and you had seized the assets of the parents of illegal alien kids, the parents are going to leave and they're going to take their kids with them. They're going to go somewhere else. I don't care where they go as long as they get out of my county.
See,
and hopefully the next county will pass the bill. What's that?
I don't know. That would have to come out of the state constitution, wouldn't it? To be able to seize assets because the state of Missouri Department of Revenue, if you owe them money, they can't put liens on your check. Like the IRS can, because it's not in the Constitution permits them to do that.
No. The way this works is it's a property seizure, just like if you had a meth house or you had a crack house, you know. So in other words, if you robbed a bank and you bought a house with the property from with the money, or you robbed a 7-Eleven and bought a car, So it's just a criminal asset forfeiture. The difference is with illegal aliens, the fact that they're in the country illegally is a confession that they're guilty. It's a conviction right there. So American citizens, you have to go through the trial, the normal constitutional process to seize their property because we have a Fourth Amendment. So that's for Americans. But illegal aliens don't have that protection because they're not here legally. And you can't have rights in a place you're not allowed to be in. Therefore, you can seize the property of illegal aliens immediately, and you can seize the companies that they work for. Take the whole company. That'd shut things down real fast.
Unfortunately, I think part of the need to go back a few steps, stop it at the border, the stay in place.
But it's not
like
stopped
that.
At the border. But it's not.
I know.
So then
that's
what do you do?
Point, but I think we need to put as much emphasis there as we do putting a kid in a seat in a classroom.
Okay,
we need to go all the way to the beginning.
Would you have voted for this bill? Would you have voted to create an illegal alien-free zone in Santa Rosa County, seize the property of illegal aliens in our county, seize the companies that hire them, and create a situation where they leave here with their kids and take them out of our schools? Would you have done that?
Not being an attorney, I don't know where that line would be drawn in that bill.
Why would you need an attorney?
What I do know is...
Why would you need an attorney?
Well, what I would do is make certain that no kid would register or be part of that school district without them being properly legally in the country.
Okay.
I think you need to have
Agreed.
Legal either citizenship or green card or what's the application status. But I still
well,
believe
it's temporary
in the
visas.
Same
you know, if you're on a work no, visa, your kids can go to school too. But you can't.
A green card
can't.
Don't make you a full citizen. It makes you
no.
legally in the country, but you're not a full citizen.
No, but I had a green card when I was in school. I mean, I came here as a teenager. I didn't become a citizen until 21. So I went to. I had all the.
Yeah,
so the only thing
legally,
you can't do.
You were legal
the only
in
thing
the country
you can't,
to do something.
I was legal in the country.
Go
but
to
the
school,
thing is,
you said.
The only thing you cannot do with a green card is vote and serve on a jury. Those are the only two restrictions on a green card. That's it.
Right. And it's kind of there are parts of your bill that you created that are outstanding. But
oh, thank
I
you.
Have a legal question about what we can forfeiture. I guess I see what your point is. They're breaking the law as a result. They're a lawbreaker, just like
mm-hmm.
criminal forfeiture, like you were saying.
Well, they're criminals.
I don't know how can we do that if it's a violation, if you're talking about federal versus state. I'm trying to see,
the federal government has no control over that part. You know, citizens have to take these things back. You create the laws that you're willing to be governed by, not coming from Nancy Pelosi and that bunch there.
Mm-hmm. And, Mike, Mike, the reason I picked civil asset forfeiture is specifically not a federal procedure. It's strictly local. The word immigrant doesn't even, or immigration procedures, doesn't even come into the bill. And the reason I did that
mm-hmm.
was to preclude any federal involvement, so they couldn't say anything. And they don't have, all they have is jurisdiction at the border. They don't have jurisdiction in our state. They don't have jurisdiction in our county. Their jurisdiction is at the border. What?
Except, remember one thing. They have the spigot of revenue. They can turn the spigot on.
Okay, but you're not
off.
Talking about legal. You're not talking about. You're talking about coercion and extortion. You're not talking about constitution and rights.
Well, yeah, I mean
there's
that's what
difference.
It is.
Well, then you stop the coercion and extortion.
Exactly.
Yeah, who has
you do that?
All right, one at a time. And Pianki was right when he said it to me. Pianki first, then Mike.
Who has the spigot?
Mike.
I'm sorry.
Who is it you're saying has the? Speaking of revenue.
The Department of Education, the money that is spent or sent from on high in D.C. that comes to the states, the federal portion of education revenue, they
How
have
does that
a say
civil asset
in where
forfeiture?
That revenue goes.
How does that affect civil asset forfeiture?
Oh, no. I was talking about in terms of financing education, that, you know, one thing you have to do is make certain that they don't try and take your money away. That's
How can
what
they
I'm
take
talking
our money
about.
Away? How can they do that?
Oh, well,
how can they take our money?
I'll give you an example. Where was it? Special education law years ago. They
mm-hmm.
were going to use money to enforce. Not that we don't need special ed law. We do.
Mm-hmm.
But the
mm-hmm.
point is they were going to manipulate school districts through funding in states. That if you
mm-hmm.
didn't adopt this law, you're not going to get the money.
That's
and
called
that, you know, again, coercion. Yeah.
That's,
I agree
federal
with
extortion.
You.
Okay. But,
and unfortunately,
again...
It's been going on forever. Yeah.
But again, the answer
Here's
is...
Here's the thing
that,
on that.
Go ahead, Pink.
The federal government only has money that they can give you from, you know, two, maybe more sources that I think of. One, borrowing. You need to stop the federal government from having the ability to wide open borrow the way they do. And second, mm-hmm. the states give the federal government money that turns around and comes back to them under these mm-hmm. extortion practices.
Which they require, unfortunately, they are allowing that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish they
We
didn't.
Need to change that. Yeah, see, my feeling is, and I'm not trying to pick on you too much here, but just a little bit. My feeling is you want to, and it's not just you, but people are more willing to opt for an excuse as to why something can't be done than to say why it can. So you're on the negative side rather than the positive side. the same. This is the problem.
Well,
this is how we fix it, as opposed to this is the problem where we can't fix it because of. You see the difference in the arguments? That's what I'm
hearing. No. I agree, because as a mayor, I was accused a lot of time of never saying, taking no for an answer, which is the way I worked as a public official. And I feel that way, too, is that there's ways to work this to make certain that it turns out the best for the community and for the kids. But in order to do that, you've got to have everybody on board. And you've got people who just think, well, we know why they want the wide open borders. We get it. It's a way to stack the voting machines. I get it. But, you know, we need to – what's the term I want to use? But to try and be a little pragmatic. And I don't believe that we should be filling up our empty seats in our classrooms with kids that aren't here legally. Mm-hmm. I think that should be just up and down the line. Local, state, and federal law should represent that unless your family is here legally or you have a temporary visa or whatever, you cannot enroll in public school.
Okay, we've already written a local bill. We've written the local bill that does that. We've given you the tool to make that happen. Now what?
Oh, yeah. And I think we need to do that at state and federal level as well. Let's take it up.
Okay, great. Let's just talk local. You're known here locally, okay? You've got public experience. You've been a teacher. So you're the perfect person to advocate this bill in front of the county commission. Plus all the people
and
that know you have supported your campaign.
Yeah. Well, and I am going to be talking with the county commission, going back to our earlier discussion about taxes.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about that. But
how about this bill, too?
No, I agree. I think for the most part, yes. But like I said, there's stuff in it I still don't quite understand.
Absolutely.
And so I need to go back through and make certain that I understand what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But
so ask me, what parts don't you understand?
Oh, I had it in front. I'm actually on
my
phone
time?
Right now.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah,
let's
do it next
time. Okay.
Because I've got a 3-month-old that I got to take care of in a few minutes. So,
no, I appreciate your time. Listen, and we can always do it offline too, but if there's any part you don't understand, then that's what I need to know. And I can probably, I've tried to make it as I can in a bill without getting cumbersome.
And what I do is when I read something like that, I go through and check off paragraphs. Mm-hmm. I kind of run a copy off for myself and write ideas on the side. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to do that. Shame on me. I'm not as prepared as I would like to have been.
Don't worry about that. But here's the thing, too. Yeah. Don't follow under the mystique of the lawyer. Until a lawyer approves it or a judge approves it, it can't happen. That's like saying the Second Amendment doesn't matter until the Supreme Court says it's okay. That's a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah.
And part of our education process here at Action Radio is to let folks know that you don't need a lawyer's permission to file a bill. You don't. The lawyers need the laws to work with. So you give this law to the lawyers to work with. That's why you want it passed. So then they can go to court and fight for the rights of Americans, you know, over illegal aliens that can't be here.
And both my kids.
Yeah, we've been doing
it. Hold on, Piyaki, just for a second. Go ahead, Mike. We only got a couple minutes left for them.
Both my kids. Yeah, I got to run here in a minute. Both my kids did 2 internships on Capitol Hill, and one of them did an internship in Jefferson City, the Missouri State Capitol. So I've had a lot of background in bills and things like that, and it's unfortunately when you get a hold of your senator or your congressman or local or state rep, you end up getting a legislative assistant or a
well, actually not too bad. They do talk to the legislators, but here's one thing before Priyanka gives the last comment. If any of your kids or people you know are around the D.C. area, I'm looking for lobbyists for Action Radio to actually lobby our bills directly to Congress.
I will talk to both of them.
Are they up there? I'm serious.
One works in Atlanta. She works in Atlanta for the U.S. Census Bureau, and then he works for Sinclair Broadcasting, and was actually for 3 years worked for the House Republican Campaign Committee.
What's Sinclair? Yeah, who do they do? If you don't mind me asking, what's Sinclair?
Sinclair, they have 600 TV and radio stations across the country.
Well, see if they'll carry my show.
WBAR.
Okay, see if they'll carry my
show. I'm sorry.
See if they'll carry my show, Action
there you
Radio.
Go.
Yeah. I'm
see, Let me
ask
see
them.
What I can do. I'll see what I can do.
Okay, cool.
I'll see if I can help you out because you're a good friend.
I love it.
Well,
thank you. And even if I argue with you, I'm just trying to make things better. You know, so don't.
I'm
not picking on you.
Okay. I agree with you 100%. But
good.
I got to go because I got a 3-month-old. So
okay.
let's talk. I'll talk to you later.
The problem goes down the list. You got American citizens that's paying to teach illegals, those that's in the country's children, how to speak English, read and speak English, where American children learn how to read and speak English at home to a great extent.
Yeah,
I wish that was the case, but I've had homeschoolers who transferred in before high school, and they were usually lacking in a few areas. That's a whole other thing for another day. But anyway, I got to run, guys. Thanks,
at least they understood what you meant when you said, shut up.
That's okay. It's not a big deal, but I got to go. So
okay.
Anyway, thank you, gentlemen. Greg, I'll call you or text you a little bit later on.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Yeah, I know. I know you want to say stuff, but I know he had limited time. I didn't want to get into a whole other topic.
Yeah, I understand, but you guys were talking to each other. You want to, everybody want to say something, nobody can hear. But the problem is you have a problem because people are not willing to do what's needed to change things.
Oh, I know.
They want to wait till a court says okay. And that's why nothing ever progresses, and you find yourself in these dilemmas the way we see the country is today.
No, we've become a nation of cowards. I mean, this is not the greatest generation that fought World War II. This is the let's stay at home because I don't care because the government's going to pay for me generation. You know, we've become a nation of babies and cowards, and it's really sad.
And they cow down to criminals. Mm-hmm. They want to reduce the punishment and don't punish at all. If you, just like bankruptcy should apply to an insolvent student, not giving them money, because giving them money is not going to do any good in the long term. Aliens that's here should be punished, like you made mention of taking their assets. They're not supposed to be accumulating assets if they're in the country illegal.
Especially when they're sending our money out of the country.
That's exactly what they know. It's a sucking sound like Ross Perot made mention of back when he was running.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk to Brianna about the trade thing next time because we're talking a little bit about that. She was talking about outsourcing jobs and stuff. And I was going to tell about the tariffs and the trades and how Trump said to Mexico, you know, all those cheap cars that you're sending in. Well, you can do that, but, you know, we're going to put a 25% tariff on them. So they cost as much as American cars. So there's no incentive for our companies to move there to get cheap labor. We're going to take a break here in a little bit. But, thanks for pointing out that I can't hear sometimes. I think if I'm talking that there is space and sometimes there isn't. And so I can't always hear the other person. But it's interesting, though. But I'm just curious your perception that when I was talking to Mike. So Mike, politician, right? School educator, got a master's degree, bright guy. But he still feels the need, like I said at the end of our conversation, more to make an excuse for something than to solve it. And that's, I think that's very pervasive in our country right now.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. They make excuses with no solution, which the solution is obvious. If you cut off, like he said, that the Department of Education won't give us money. Hell, get rid of the Department of Education.
Exactly. But this is an evolving process. You know, when I started Action Radio several years ago, back in 2014 is when I actually did it. In fact, I dug up one of my articles because it's interesting talking about this big thing that's come out recently with Phil Graham and John Early. John Early is an economist, Phil Graham, former senator. And they're talking about income equality is the problem, not inequality. But the people at the lower end of the scale and the middle of the scale are actually making about the same amount because the lower folks don't work, but they get the welfare. And the middle folks do work, but they get taxed more highly. So people in the $35,000 to $40,000 gap, those that are making like under 30, are still making a good living. But they're not working. You know, it's fascinating. And I was looking at that, and they came up with pretty much the same conclusions I wrote. This is going to sound like I'm, you know, blowing my own horn here. But I wrote an article 8 years ago, you know, the conservative response to the minimum wage. And when you take into account income, of people of the minimum wage income, you also have to take into account their food stamps, their Section 8 housing, any welfare they get, any other benefits they have, any subsidies of any kind. That all counts to what I call the total revenue index. And so what I found, and I had a Cato Institute article, because they did a big thing on this too, that if you take the total amount of money people make and you break it down into an hourly wage, which is what I did, you know, I think Mississippi folks on welfare are making like $45 an hour, and this is several years ago. Hawaii is making like $85 an hour in welfare. So that's why people don't work.
Well, you know, here's the thing too. Why would a lending institution lend someone money for an endeavor that doesn't have the possibility of reaping an income to pay the damn loan off? Would a lending institution lend you the money to buy a piece of excavating equipment, and they ask you, what you going to do with it? Well, I'm going to dig the yard up and fill it in and dig it up and fill it in. Well, how in the hell is that going to generate revenue to pay off the loan?
Exactly. Well, that's like the new housing thing. In fact, we can probably get into this. I'm going to take a quick break here for a couple of minutes. But this idea that the Bank of America is not loaning to white people, you know, that they're taking black and Hispanic and other folks, they're going to get preferences in loans. And they're not going to ask for credit checks. They're not going to ask for this or the other thing. This is the savings and loan scandal. Of course it's racism, but it's worse than that. Well, that's bad enough. But what I'm saying, but it's more than just racism. You know, it's economic discrimination, and it's stupid. Because they're not asking for credit. They're not asking for financial records. They're not asking for anything. They're just loaning money under this political.
That's racism. It's like reparations. I could give you a pile of money.
Uh-huh.
And by the nature of a human being, you going to go take out a scoop of that money every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have a means of production to replace what you are taking out in your little scoops. Sooner or later, that pile is gone. And you're right back at square one as you were in the beginning. Now, here's the trick to that. Those who have the money, that's where you're going to get the money to create that pile called reparations. Well, they are taking the chance, because if they give you 100, they may not get 100 back, because you got to come back to them to spend. So it would be more worthy for them to keep the money in their pocket, in their coffers, where it's safe and they can control it.
That makes sense. Yeah, the whole idea of, you know, I was thinking about that too, of my plan, and you mentioned it, the stopping Congress from borrowing money. People don't realize that really is, the more I think about it, that really is the secret to solving most of our problems, because it creates deflation. And it reverses the transfer of money. So the money's being transferred now to the banks and the government by means of inflation. So they inflate the currency, everybody loses purchasing power. Well, if people are losing it, then it's going to go to the people that have the money to make the loans and charge the interest rates, the banks and the government. Government creates inflation, so they get more money. The banks get more money because they make more loans. The people lose money because the value of the dollar that they work for is worth less. It's 8% less.
That's exactly right.
So
when you create a law to curtail the hands of the federal government, then also you got to be expecting of some court going to come up with some new worded definition that's going to say, well, you can't do that. Well, you got to be able to tell them to go to hell too. We are going to do it. And unless people start putting their foot down, Greg, you're going to continue to have, it's going to get worse.
Oh, I know.
The problems
I know.
That you experience.
Yeah, but I'm expecting some big media. I'm working with some folks to get us some national recognition here. I think things are going to change. And because I think people are really mad, they just don't know what to do about it. It's like, what can I do? Well, what you can do is share our bills and become a citizen advocate and start demanding this kind of change. I mean, the tools are here. The bills are here. We've written the laws that Congress won't pass and the state legislatures won't pass and the local governments won't pass. So you got to make them pass them. You know, not by threats, but by lobbying, by saying, I really want this if you want to get reelected. You know, and that's perfectly legitimate. That's legitimate political discourse here. You know, pass this or I'm not going to vote for you. Or I'm not going to contribute money. I mean, that's what the lobbyists do. Lobbyists say, I'm not going to give you money. You know, Big Pharma says, I'm not going to give you money if you pass product liability on Big Pharma. So we have to have more people say, well, I'm not going to vote for you if you don't pass liability on Big Pharma. And there comes the competition. And then we see who wins. We can win because we have more people than they have dollars. But we're not going to win until the people get engaged, because the lobbyists are already engaged. They're already at war with us for the big corporations. And not that all corporations are bad, but Big Pharma is. You know, big tech is, and they need to be controlled. They need to be reined in. And you want to do it in a way that doesn't cost all of us money, with a whole new regulatory department, a whole new set of laws. You look at the bills. I was thinking about this today, too. It's sort of by default this happened. But whenever I craft these bills, whenever I work with people to craft them, you know, I didn't really think about this until recently, but we create bills that are self-regulating. It doesn't cost anything. It doesn't require another government department. You look at the bill to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. Well, that just stops Congress from borrowing money. They literally cannot borrow money. It cannot be authorized if we take that power away. It doesn't take a new department. It doesn't take a bunch of regulations. The bill to put liability on big tech if they touch anything that anybody does on social media, or if they mess with the search engines. That's not going to cost money. People will take that issue to court. It's self-enforcing. Same with vacuum product liability. We don't have a new department or a new fund or a new tax. It doesn't cost any money. People will use the court system to take Big Pharma to court for their injuries and deaths. It's self-regulating. You know, my Santa Rosa bill on illegal aliens. It doesn't cost anything. In fact, it pays for itself because, you know, I'm sure there'd be certain administrative fees to do it, but most of the money goes back to the people. And it's only the cost of taking stuff. Well, that's easy. You just take their stuff, just like if they were a drug dealer or a bank robber. Criminals are criminals. Being in this country illegally is a crime. That's a confession. The fact that you're here illegally and your immigration, you know, or your citizenship is not a secret. It is a public document. It is a public information. So, of course, they can ask. I don't care what the Supreme Court says. Supreme Court cannot legislate. They cannot make policy. They cannot make rules. They cannot say we have to educate illegal aliens because of that bogus reason that, well, we want them to grow up to be, you know, responsible citizens. Well, they can't do that in this country. They have to come here legally. Then they can do it. Supreme Court can't do that. They can't, you know, invalidate all of our immigration laws and citizenship laws and border laws just because they want to. So that's the point.
Well, we have a remedy to solve these things and put things in check.
Mm-hmm.
But the present method on how things are operating is nothing more than tantamount of kicking a can down the road.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. But we do.
And your debt is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. At some point in time down the road, something's going to happen. And I don't think people not only going to like it, but many don't deserve it because they had nothing to do with it. That means that your future generations don't wake up with this problem that they had nothing to do with.
Mm-hmm. That's part of why we look at our younger folks. Look at Brianna and look at Amber. They're young adults, right? So we need to fix this so that they are basically not slaves to the national debt. That's what we need to do. That's our job.
And we need to start talking that. You know,
well,
I often understand, you know, there's so much things is based on entertainment in this country, mm-hmm. whether it's basketball, football, tennis, but right. also it's entertainment the way things are working. Like you just said, mm-hmm. these children of the future is going to be kowtow with all this national debt that we have.
Mm-hmm.
But it's entertaining on how it is allowed to happen. Seemingly, people just like to talk about it. You got people yeah. that come together in groups. They all old, no young people, to listen to the old making these decisions that the young people are going to have to deal with when they become older. That's entertainment.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's just a coffee hour. It's a, what do you call it, potluck, a dinner club. That's all it is.
Yeah. What do you think of what Mike said when he talked about the cult of the expert? I need an attorney to take a look at this. I'm not sure if this is, you know, all legal. I mean, doesn't he think I've already researched the law?
No, there ain't no law yet. So what's the attorney going to compare it with?
Well, that's the other point. That's the perfect other point. Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking it's not there. And this is why I say lawyers can only work with the laws that exist. They can't. Well, I mean, they might say if something's blatantly unconstitutional. You know, if you pass a law that says that the Bank of America has to discriminate against white people, you know, that's not going to fly. The fact that they're doing it in a policy means that the Civil Rights Commission can get involved. That's a different story. But the thing is, you know, there's certain things that are obvious that lawyers are going to tell you, well, that's kind of stupid. That's not going to go anywhere. But the legislatures have lawyers. You don't think that the county commission is going to have their lawyer look at this? Of course they are. You don't
they
think
got legislators
Congress?
Use lawyers to write up law. That's what they use them for.
Well, actually, the lobbyists write the laws. There was a huge article on this. In fact, Emerald Robinson, when I was on her show, talked about this too. So the legislatures don't. We write more laws than the members of Congress. We, us, you and me. The people involved in Action Radio, we literally write more laws. Brandon's probably never written a law in his entire life. We do. As citizen legislators, we are actually churning out more good legislation than the entire Congress of the United States combined.
It's just like in St. Louis, Cori Bush. I hear a radio station host saying, well, she won't even come on our radio station. And we're more closer to the people who she was on the podium and up on the soup cooler hollering at through a loudspeaker during all the riots and the BLM action. So that means somebody else put her up to run for the position that she has, and they're the one that's pulling her strings and benefit, not the ones that went and voted. Why is
probably,
that? Because
well,
the ones that
guy.
Went and voted.
Yeah, the white guy that needs a black face.
That's what it is.
Yeah, white guy needs a black
woman. She's a preacher over in Webster Groves, which is white. But here's the thing. It happens because the people that vote for her operate off of emotion and unfounded truths. Just emotions. And that all starts back with the education of their child.
Yeah, but also people are scared. You know, you look at Mike, and I'm not picking on when he's not here, or I try not to, but his attitude is very common. You know, we need a lawyer to take a look at this. I'm not sure we can do this. I want to ask other people. I don't trust my own judgment is what he's saying. You know, I mean, he has questions. I understand that. That actually makes perfect sense to ask questions. But the idea that some expert, somebody else, some other party, it's like when I said before, people didn't think the Second Amendment existed until the Supreme Court said it exists. What, you couldn't read it? It's right there. It's right in front of you. What part are you missing? Well, it hasn't been approved officially by the only people I trust to approve it. Well, you don't need their approval. They need your approval. You got it backwards. But people are powerless and they're cowards. We almost have to give people permission to do things that they already have the power to do. It's a weird psychology. I'm not sure how to get around it. But people need to know. They need to know what we say can be done. That's why we say it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But people, they are lazy. They are afraid. Fear is learned. I mean, a child is born with it because they don't know. But once they learn otherwise, then it's no longer a fear.
Yeah.
It's commonplace.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too, about that immigration, my asset forfeiture bill. It's specifically crafted to, like I say, have no federal involvement at all. It's local law enforcement, you know, enforcing the law against local criminals. And once they leave the county, they leave the county. I don't care where they go. If they go to other counties, well, then they can pass the same bill. And they can take their stuff too, you know. So there's no possible way for the federal government to get involved unless they come up with a bogus ruling, which they could, that you can't seize the property of illegal aliens without all kinds of due process stuff and make up stuff for them. But they don't have rights here. Because I say again, you cannot have rights in a place you're not allowed to be in. That is a fundamental contradiction. It's irrational. Anyway.
You shouldn't have lawyers coaching illegals on how to manipulate and avoid the system.
Because
if they've done that in other areas, they will be complicit of the crime that is being developed from their advice.
They are complicit. They're accomplices. They're enablers. So, yeah, all these immigration law firms that help illegals, you know, stick around, they're just as guilty as the illegals themselves. Anyway, let me play a couple things. And I got an article I think you're going to find really interesting. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. Isn't it fun here? I have my buttons. I have so much more to do. I got to make a theme for Brianna. I can make one for Amber. I've got new reporters. I got Heather and Dorothy, and I got like four themes to make. You know, for I'm gonna be busy on the production end. Pretty much. I made a new Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for action for. Andy Federalist Paper number 13. I'm trying to do two things at once. That's why I'm kind of stumbling here a bit over my dialogue. But anyway, so all these things are happening. So I'm going to hit the production probably today sometime and see what I can create. So Bianchi's back, made his line live. Anybody else wants to call us? 215-383-3832. Let me check live chat. I haven't checked live chat yet. I should have. No, nobody's there. That's probably why we don't have a live chat, because I don't check it often enough. I want to thank again my new listeners in Australia, England, and Canada. We are growing pretty fast in these places. Still, a majority of listeners are American, but it's nice to have you folks here. And you can call on the Skype line. We do have a Skype line, and so it goes directly to the studio here. It goes to my screen. Everything's all forwarded. And so if you look on your broadcast page, you'll find the code, the online code, and you need to call us a day ahead of time so that I can approve your account, and then you can call the show directly. And that's how that works. So that works. You've got live chat. You've got Skype. You've got all these things to reach us here. And, of course, the old-fashioned way, if you're, you know, within just regular calling range, call in. And if you're a guest, we also have Direct Connect. I can get you on a mic and a headset. Pianki's phone's so good, I don't have to do that. You're one of the few folks that have a really good phone. And so it does not require a mic or a headset for you, unless you have one and you didn't tell me. Back to you, sir.
Well, you know, we still have these problems that we have to confront, but it seems like the problem is overbearing and the country is falling into a demise. And
well,
they keep creating. You know, like, for instance, aid. There's a lady, a Zambian. She was an economist for the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Damiki Moye, and she wrote a book called Dead Aid and Why Aid Is Not Working and How There's a Better Way. And she made mention of $1 trillion of aid that's been given to African countries, and the lives mm-hmm. of the people have not been changed. So why
that?
Do we continue to indulge in these no-go-nowhere programs and at the same time create more that go nowhere also? It just don't make any sense. It's just
well,
a burden on taxpayers.
Let's say
benefit because the
right.
aid goes to these countries and they got corrupt governments, and then it comes back around to them like a boomerang.
Mm-hmm. And how about the corporations? If a country gets foreign aid, say somebody, you know, the old Banana Republic. So United Fruit Company was the company of the Banana Republics. So they'd go in and they'd exploit the countries, and the government would keep in power somebody that would keep United Fruit as the main industry.
It's just like Halliburton. It's just like that one book. What's written by the guy? I can't think of it. Confessions of an Economic Hitman. It's how they convince these governments to take mm-hmm. on projects that's going to be performed by companies like Halliburton.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be financed by government money.
Mm-hmm.
American government from aid is financing projects that they don't neither need or want. And the companies that's benefiting from it is like Halliburton at one time. Then
yeah, Bechtel.
We know
remember
they,
Bechtel? Remember Bechtel? B-E-C-H-T-E-L.
Right, it's another company. Bechtel.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then it comes back around to these politicians, coffers, that mm-hmm. sat at the table to push these bills through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a mafia, corporate, government, fascistic conspiracy is what it is, or you know, it's a they're basically one entity, and they give the foreign aid knowing it's going to come back. It's money laundered through the country. That's what Ukraine's for. Ukraine's the new deep state money laundering bank. So money goes in there, then it comes back to politicians, it comes back to companies to pay for goods, it comes back to military contractors and arms, you know, and everybody's benefiting except us because it's our money, and they're borrowing our money to print more money, to create inflation, to pay for things that they want to do by wishful thinking, and it's costing us more and more. Let me get to this article here. I think you're going to find this really interesting. It's called What Really Happened? The History of Government Hopes You Don't Learn. Or the History of the Government Hopes You Don't Learn. I can't find an author. I can't find anything else, but the website is What Really Happened. And it talks about the company Tao, and you'll see why I'm reading this as we go through it. And there's that song again, Tennessee Ernie Ford. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and you're deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Famous song. Or excuse me for saying, I won't do it again. Maybe I will. Anyway, but the point is, you owe your soul to the company store. Well, why is that? Well, it says on the article, in the early 1900s, and this is part of our Labor History Week we're kind of doing right now. In the early 1900s, one of the worst abuses of workers involves what was called the company town. This is a town wholly owned by a mining company in a remote location. Excuse me. Workers were attracted to move there by the lure of high wages. However, once there, they discovered that the cost of living was even higher, and it kept them there by the company store, which is the only source for the necessities of life. The company was free to hand out high wages, knowing they would take that same money back in as profits at the company store. No matter how hard the workers tried, they could never make enough money to live on and would be in debt to the company store. As long as they were in debt, the company could legally prevent the workers from leaving. It was a form of corporate slavery concealed in a bookkeeping trick. Well, I think in many ways it's worse than slavery. I mean, slaves, you know, as bad as slavery was, and slavery was horrible, but the slaves were not, you know, used up and thrown away because slaves represent an investment. You know, if you destroyed your slaves' health like these company towns, they just replaced the workers with somebody else. Workers were expendable. Slaves cost money. Slaves were never in debt. You know, when the slaves escaped, they didn't owe their slave owner a bunch of money. They just left. You know, so people don't think about that, but the company town in many ways was much more oppressive and evil because the more you work for them, the more in debt you got. Well, that's the opposite of work. You're supposed to make money when you go to work, not give it away, not give it back to the company. But what a racket. Think about that the company store and the company apartments and the company cabins, they actually charged the workers more than they paid them, so the workers would always be in debt. And yet that's what happened. Pianchi, then I'll move on to the article.
Well, that's the same thing with Joe Biden talking about giving $10,000 to those who have $90,000 in student loan. It just makes it worse in the long run when you put it on paper.
Well, I think it makes it worse for those of us that don't have loans. I mean, I didn't go to law school and I didn't go to an Ivy League college. They probably could have qualified simply because they didn't want the loans. I didn't want the responsibility because I didn't know if I was going to be able to find a job that paid for those loans. You know, as I was pretty much a stranger in this country, you know, when I'm making plans for college, I was still a Canadian citizen. I didn't become American until I graduated. And even then, I still didn't want the loans. I didn't want the responsibility of having to pay such a horrendous amount of money back. I didn't even know if I was going to find a job in my field. My track record not being really great. So, yeah, that to me was the responsible thing to do. Go ahead.
That's another thing. Why would you lend students money to take up a major that's not promising or assured that they're going to have an income to pay the loan back? And even your insolvency. Your insolvency is when you have more debt than you have income.
Mm-hmm.
And relieving a portion of that debt still leaves you insolvent. And sooner or later, interest would take you right back to the place where you brought in the $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a dog chasing his tail.
Yeah. Well, if you get student loans out of the government, see, the government guarantees the loan, which means we, the taxpayers, guarantee it. So the college, so as they increase money to student loans, the colleges increase money for tuition. It's just like the Ford increased the cost of their vehicle by as much as the electric car tax. Oh, their electric vehicles went up $8,000. Well, that's because the tax subsidy was $8,000. So they figure customers have $8,000 of free money. They might as well get it. It's kind of a weird system. Anyway.
And you know the funny thing?
All right,
you just said.
What's that?
Well, I know, but I got to say that.
Go ahead.
You said guaranteed by the government.
Which
well, under us. Normal circumstances, mm-hmm. under normal circumstances, a lending institution who has a fiduciary responsibility to its shareholders would not lend money to that venture. You wouldn't get the money because all indications say exactly what it is saying. You can't pay it back. So here comes the old Uncle Sam, the government, Pelosi, Schumer, and the rest. Oh, well, we'll guarantee it. Well, what you're doing, you're throwing it back onto the taxpayers once again.
Oh, yeah. And this is why all student loans should come from the college. And the college should be responsible for covering the loan if the students can't. You know, you'd see majors change real fast. And you'd see loans be curtailed. A whole bunch of the colleges were responsible for the debt if the students didn't pay it back. All right, let me go. I want to continue on here because this is actually going to make a lot of sense. So let's get back to the company town. So the idea of the company town is that you work for this mine. You're in a remote location. And everything that you need to survive on, you get at the company store, but they engineer the prices so that that you actually lose money. You go in debt to the store to pay for the things, even though you're earning money in the mine. Okay, next paragraph. The abuses of the company towns led eventually to the formation of labor unions and threatened at one point to spark a communist revolution in the United States. So this is a question Brianna raised in the first hour. The threat of such a revolution caused corporations to adopt more humane attitudes towards their workers. Yeah, they had to. As word spread of what a trap the company towns could be, spread through folk songs similar to the one quoted above that I sang rather badly, workers simply refused to sign up and the company towns faded into history. So that's how people have power. They don't realize it, but the people can beat the companies by simply not buying their products and not working for them. People don't know their own power. We got to work more with that. I think there's a theme we should develop here at Action Radio. So the next paragraph says, I've received a lot of mail. This is the article author who I can't find yet. I received a lot of mail regarding the article, "The United States Government is Dying." That should be interesting. I'll have to read that one next week or maybe tomorrow. It says most of it has been positive. He says the negative email always seems to point out the standard of living Americans have, usually defined in terms of the possessions we own. But for the most part, we don't own those things. We display to others for their esteem and admiration, which is interesting, right? The vast majority of Americans are deeply in debt for the items they buy. TV sets, cars, recreational vehicles, vacations, even supermarkets have credit card machines to purchase food with. Using credit for the basic necessities of life has become so ubiquitous that it is almost invisible. The debt-based economy has turned the entire nation into a company town. That's why I found this article fascinating. Let me read that again and we'll take comments. Debt-based economy has turned the entire nation into a company town. And I would say also that welfare dependency is the welfare company town. People can't get out of welfare because, you know, it's so ingrained in the system that the opportunities, once you're in it, you know, the jobs don't pay as much as the welfare pays, so you're stuck, but you're unproductive. And other people have to pay for that welfare. But the nation is, the debt that everybody's carrying, the government debt, the personal debt, the debt out there has turned us into a company town. How's that for an analogy, Bianchi?
Good one.
Just thinking. Okay. Yeah. I know you got to find that unmute button. I'm actually able to tolerate a few seconds of silence now, whereas before I'd always jump in to say something. I shall continue. Americans are living on borrowing, and when the economy slows down, the repayment of those loans becomes a trap. Eventually, the lenders acquire those few things Americans own that actually have any worth, namely their homes. That's what foreclosures are all about. It's taking something back that you thought you owned because you couldn't pay for it when you never really owned it in the first place. Because if you did own it, then the bank couldn't take it. See? Mortgage, death contract, mortgage. That's what it means. That's what a death contract, that's what a mortgage is, a death contract. All right. It says, and it is worth reminding those readers who claim that our nation is still doing well, that private ownership of homes has been in decline for quite some time. Whereas home ownership was the reality for most of our parents and grandparents, a far larger percentage of Americans are now renting. Americans are working their lives out, and at the end, they have little but a few status icons to show for it. Our rear ends are well decorated with designer jeans, but if you think about it, blue jeans are pretty much what the workers in those older company towns wore into the mines every day. It's true. Is there any difference between the blue jeans you wear made expensive with a designer label and the blue jeans made expensive by the company store? It is not really the same. Is it not really the same trap at work? And he says, during the boom times of the 90s, the media assured us that the economy was doing wonderfully, that the good times would roll on forever. In reality, 80% of the population suffered a decline in living standards, and to make up for it, they bought on credit, assured that eventually there would be money to pay for it all. Then the crash happened. That's 2000. Oh, that would have been 90. When did the crash happen in the 90s? I'm not sure. Anyway, people are losing their homes, their retirements, their businesses, all those things they had worked for that had real worth, lost to that company store called the debt-based economy. The trap is that the U.S. government has been running itself pretty much the same way, never able to balance its books. The U.S. government just keeps borrowing and borrowing to make ends meet, except in the 96 when Gingrich and Clinton actually worked out a deal. We did have a balanced budget, and we did have no debt increase. So that was it. That's been it for like the last 100 years, except for Calvin Coolidge, and that was 100 years ago. It says they are stuck. The people get stuck with the bills. The interest alone now exceeds all the income tax paid by all the U.S. citizens. Let me say that again. The interest on the national debt alone now exceeds all the income tax paid by all U.S. citizens. You're not supposed to notice, of course, since taxed into near poverty, you too are living on your credit cards. And never mind that the government borrows so much money that it drives interest rates up, making the money you do have to borrow more costly to repay. So for those who claim that an economy based on debts rather than on worth is a good thing, it usually is from the point of view of the bank, which gets to print up those debt notes at whim and then lend them out at full value. But for the people who are trapped into paying the interest on all those debt notes spent, the nation has been turned into one gigantic company town where prices are always kept just there above wages, where the people are kept in perpetual debt, so that no matter how hard they work, the vast majority of Americans can never buy their soul back from the company store. That was fascinating. Panty?
Well, it's true. It's true. Yeah. When you take it and you analyze it and you look at it under a microscope, mm-hmm. what you really don't need, you look at it with your plain eyeball. It's yeah. true. You trapped. You're in a perpetual trap.
So how do we fix that trap? We know how to fix that trap, actually. I came up with a solution without even knowing it. When I wrote this bill, I had no idea the implications were as vast as they are. So how do we stop being a nation that's a company town? Well, our constitutional amendment.
The ones that's trapped in it, unfortunately, mm-hmm. they don't have the literacy to understand what you're talking about. So you got to start on before them.
Yeah, I know. Let me tell you why we're in a national company town. It's these words, which I shall now elucidate right here. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. The Congress shall have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. 15 words. The reason that we have a $30 trillion debt, that we are a national company town, the reason that debt is growing exponentially, the reason we have inflation, the reason we have borrowing, the reason we have all these problems are these 8 words. The Congress shall have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. So the obvious solution is to delete those words from the Constitution. So it says specifically in the paragraph above, Congress shall not have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States, nor to print money in excess of revenues. So they can't print their way into debt either. That stops the spigot.
Well, unless in time of war or something.
No, 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 no. I would say no. And that's what's going to happen. I'm glad you brought that up. I had to think this through too. So in time of war, if the missiles have been launched from China, they're heading for us now. Is Congress going to have the time to borrow money?
No, what they're going to do is constantly prepare for that time by spending
right.
money on missiles.
If you're preparing, do you have to borrow money, or can you save it from earnings? Can you invest it in nuclear missiles to retaliate? So even in a war, it's too late to borrow money. You don't have time.
Well,
you got 30 minutes.
You have to look at World War II, how
okay.
Ford Motor Company came to the rescue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what I'm saying is back then the government could borrow money. What I'm saying is if we're going to go to war, the government has to prepare to go to war without having to borrow money. So you can't rely on it. If we take away their power to borrow money, they're going to have to do something else, which means they're not going to be able to spend money on all kinds of stupid stuff, like foreign aid. If they can't borrow money and we have to prepare to defend ourselves against a nuclear war or against a conventional war or against an invasion or against, you know, our trade routes being upset or against Americans being captured overseas or anything else, they have to do that without borrowing money. That just requires planning. The states don't borrow money. They have to balance their budget.
Well, I would like to see it get to the point where they start giving back by reducing taxes.
Okay, well, exactly.
And
then
rebate.
But think about it. Okay, let's follow this through. Because this is critical for, I think, people to understand. If we stop the Congress from borrowing money, the first thing that happens is the debt stops increasing. The next thing that's going to happen is the bonds, as they come due, which Congress does have to pay, when they start paying off the bonds that make up the national debt starts shrinking. The interest on the national debt starts shrinking. Well, that immediately makes more money available for other things.
Well, that there in itself is a problem, in interest on the debt from what you borrow.
Right.
Why the U.S. Treasury
but if you
provide all that service, then it wouldn't be any interest on the debt.
So if you stop the debt from growing, as the debt gets paid off, the interest is less. And eventually they're going to zero out. I think I talked to Derek Park about that. He said about 30 or 40 years, the debt's gone and the interest on the debt's gone. Because then
you got a Federal Reserve. You got a Federal Reserve, which is nothing more than a journal. It doesn't have a means of earning or producing the funds that it so-called lends out.
Well, the whole point of this bill is that the Treasury takes over for the Federal Reserve, and we go back to U.S. dollars. Now, think about this, too. If the Congress can't borrow money, they can't print money, because part of that provision is you can't print money in excess of revenues. So the only money they can print is to replace the money that's already there, or if they want to spend money, they can only spend money based on the money they take in. So what does that do to the currency? It stabilizes it, right? So the currency is stabilized. Well, why do you need a Federal Reserve if the currency is stabilized? You don't need the Fed to set interest rates. You don't need the You don't need the Fed to set interest rates if there's no borrowing, there is no inflation, and the currency is stabilized. So you get rid of the Fed.
Yeah.
Your point.
And another point is that Congress should be limited in what it spends in relationship to what it takes in. If spending a lot less than what it takes in, that should go back to the taxpayers.
Well, yeah, but I mean that they're going to spend up to what they take in at first. Now, so then the next thing to do is to reduce taxes. So you limit the amount of money that they have to do. That's how you do what you're trying to do. So you limit the amount of money that you have greater taxing, tax cuts, so that Congress only has so much money. They can't borrow. They can issue more taxes, but that's unpopular. So they can raise money in a couple of ways. They can make the economy grow. The Laffer curve. Extra productivity, a growing economy with lower tax rates actually creates more revenue for the government. So the government's going to win here because they're not going to be borrowing money. The economy's going to grow. The value of the dollar, because they're not printing money, as the economy grows, the population grows, wealth grows, the dollar gets stronger. So each dollar is worth more money. It's another reason you don't need the Fed. You don't have to regulate interest rates because interest is going to be pretty much zero because people aren't going to be borrowing. If your money keeps increasing in value, there's no need to borrow for credit cards or for capital things, and mortgages will drop, everything will drop because the dollar keeps being worth more, which means the prices keep dropping. That's called deflation. This is why this bill is the deflation bill. Deflation is the secret to reversing the transfer of money from the people to the banks and the government, to reverse it so that it goes from the banks and the government to the people. An increasing dollar, a limited currency, no borrowing from Congress, the Fed not setting interest rates because there's nothing to set. Currency is stabilized. Increasing value, increasing retirements, increasing savings, lowering purchasing prices. There's more investment. There's less borrowing. This country is going to boom. We're going to have a roaring 20s again if we do this now, like we had 100 years ago, and for the same reason. Calvin Coolidge cut the federal budget in half and cut the national debt in half. Well, I want to cut the national debt off completely. This will be the greatest thing that ever happened to our country in terms of prosperity. But they're not going to want it at the federal level because Congress lives on borrowing money. The Fed, they live on borrowing money and inflation. This is going to be a huge fight, probably the number one fight of the century in terms of economics. But think how powerful that is. If we take away their power to borrow money, then that transfer, that inflation that's now transferring 2 to 3% to the banks, the Fed, and the government, that reverses, and that 2 to 3% comes back to the people as our money becomes more valuable.
Yeah, the people don't have to get in debt with credit cards and other instruments.
Yeah, because the money keeps gaining value. So as they work for more money and people earn more money, they don't have to earn more money. They can earn the same amount of money and they'll still increase their purchasing power by several percent a year. And prices will be dropping by several percent a year because the money's worth so much more. Well, then the argument is, our exports will be more expensive. We'll find them. We'll just keep the economy here. We'll buy stuff. We'll buy our own stuff. We don't have to buy stuff from other countries. We'll buy our stuff. Other countries can't afford our goods because our dollar's too strong. Well, that's their problem, not mine. and it's not my problem to make it easier for companies to export our goods. My job is to create more freedom for more Americans by increasing the value of our money. So I don't care what happens in those other countries. That's not my problem. Isn't this interesting?
And corporations have some exuberant profits.
Mm-hmm. Well,
every time they come up with artificial intelligence robots that cut costs, mm-hmm. and increase profits at the expense of getting rid of workers who are forced to turn to other sustaining programs of some sort, that causes a big problem.
Well, here's the thing, too. If the purchasing power of Americans goes up, then cheap foreign goods become less desirable and quality American goods become more desirable. So quality American goods are going to take quality American workers to make them. So the incentive is not there to go somewhere else. Now, the companies might be able to go to foreign countries, you know, at $2 a day to make goods. But what you do is you do what Trump did with the Mexican car companies. You put a tariff. So, okay, fine. You know, if an American company moves to a foreign country to get cheap labor, they say, okay, you can move to the foreign country. You get all the cheap labor you want. But that good coming back in the United States comes in at the same wage equivalent if it were made here. So you take away the incentive for other countries to produce goods. It's good. So they can produce them here with American workers, which will be cheaper, and they should have tax breaks here. But if they go to another country and they're paying cheap labor, it's fine. But that good coming into the country on the way back in, it's going to cost just as much as if you made it here. Probably more.
Yeah, and the tariffs is another way for a government to have income.
Terrorists or tariffs? You said tariffs, right?
Tariffs. Oh, boy.
Well, it's just yeah, okay. Well, sometimes the phone, like I said, it's Blog Talk isn't the clearest. I mean, you know, actually phones get too. All right, so tariffs. Yeah, exactly. But in fact, the federal government used to be funded entirely on tariffs. That's what duty was. You paid your duty. You know, when goods come into the country, the whole government used to run on the tax collectors. The customs service were the revenue collectors. It used to be known as the revenue department. So foreign countries could bring in goods. Or American companies, I guess, overseas, the same thing. As the foreign goods come in, they pay a duty to come into the country. Well, that duty is what funded the federal government. There was no – before the income tax, that's how they did it. You know, but the government did less then. You know, so maybe we should get back to that, get back to Article 1, Section 8. But nothing bad – I can't think of a single bad effect of taking away the power of Congress to borrow money. And you look at the contingencies, you know, war. Well, you save up for it. You prepare for it in advance. You know, if you wait for a war to happen before you borrow money to gear up for it, it's too late. So that war excuse doesn't work anymore. Or the other one, national emergency. What national emergency can't you prepare for with savings in the Treasury? How much does a hurricane cost? How much does a flood cost? Well, it costs billions of dollars. Well, we've got billions of dollars. We just gave it to Ukraine, for example. So foreign aid doesn't become the priority anymore. Savings in the Treasury does. So there isn't a single natural disaster that you can't take care of with savings in the Treasury, right?
Well, states call it a rainy day fund.
Well, exactly, and the states take care of it. But the states shouldn't be running to the Fed every time there's an emergency. You know, they declare things an emergency, not because, it's, you know, they do that so they can get money. So maybe the Fed shouldn't take that money in the first place, and the state should be responsible for their emergency preparedness.
That's right. What's an emergency for the states is a catastrophe for the federal government.
Because they give out money, and they give out money to their friends and their friend corporations. So the disaster business, and they borrow money to handle disasters. So there's another thing, too. That would make oversight hearings and budget hearings a lot different. If the federal government could not borrow money, they could only pay so much to all those different government departments. So that would put discipline on the budgeting process. But there's no excuse for Congress to be able to borrow money. War is not an excuse because you have to plan for it. You know, by the time war comes, it's too late. Natural disasters, you can't wait until a natural disaster to borrow money. So there's really no reason for Congress to borrow money ever. It's the borrowing of the money that's expensive, not the things they're borrowing money for. If you borrow money for the military, if you borrow money for various things or foreign aid or illegal aliens, things like that, the things you're borrowing money for are a problem, but the fact of borrowing money is the bigger problem, especially when it comes to inflation.
Well, you know, this topic and the way it's been explored should be spoken on campaign trails.
Well, funny you should say that. I can't give you details yet, but I'm trying to have exactly that happen. I'm talking to some folks. I'm hoping to get our agenda into political campaigns for the midterms, and certainly for 2024. I expect.
Yeah, break those debt numbers down as it applies to each citizen and each taxpayer.
Yeah, I fully expect, I don't know how I'm going to do it yet, but I'm hoping to get our constitutional amendment to end the power of Congress to borrow money in the middle of the Trump campaign for 2024. I don't know how to do it. I'm talking to people. I can't give details yet. Sound like Josie. I have a plan. It's a secret. You know, but I'm working on ways that that becomes a major agenda of the Trump campaign. In fact, there are four bills that I want to see. Product liability for vaccine makers, ending liability exemption for big tech if they touch your account, constitutional amendment, taking the power of Congress to borrow money, and the disarming of the federal bureaucrat army and the give back of those guns through the civilian marksmanship program to American citizens. Those four bills, if I can get those in campaigns, state, local, you know, federal especially, for 2024, we become a major political player in this country. That's my goal. I don't even have a marketing budget. Mike was talking about campaign stuff. We do this on nothing. We do this on the strength of our ideas. But the ideas are good ideas, and that's why they're spreading. And you and all the folks that believe in what we're doing here, that take part in this show, that's why this is spreading. Because we have no budget.
Well, yeah.
It's me and a computer running this whole thing.
Yeah, good ideas usually start beneath the surface, i.e. mm-hmm. plants when they come up. Start as a seed that was put beneath the surface.
Well, the seed's growing pretty fast. So a lot of people taking notice of what we're doing. So that's the plan. We shall see. But it'll be an interesting day when citizen legislation is a preeminent part of a national election. Think about the pollsters, too. So what if the pollster questions are, do you favor vaccine product liability? See, they're not asking that now because there's no bill, because Congress could never write that bill. What if it was?
Well, no.
But let's make it a poll question.
They didn't write the bill.
Well, they can't.
These ideas are better than what's going on now, because what's going on now don't work. It just get worse and worse and worse. The same complaints, the same arguments, the same whining, the same excuses.
Yep. I call it raising complaining to an art form. You know, you look at talk radio. I intend to replace talk radio with action radio, because talk radio, all they do is get people angry to get ratings so they can charge their advertisers more money. That's what talk radio is. Oh, yeah, they get some good information out. You know, they get good information out, but nothing happens with it. The main goal of talk radio,
they don't do that.
Exactly, but you talk to any program director, anybody who knows radio.
Deposit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a deposit of victimization and the way a lot of them are constructed. But nothing really comes out of it. It's just basically putting a Band-Aid over a compound fracture.
Well, name one thing that talk radio has changed. I'll wait.
So you really going to have some silence now, man.
Well, you know, and God love Rush Limbaugh. Rush was great. He did some amazing things. But you see, Rush was never a threat to the establishment. And they knew it. That's why they didn't care. I mean, Clinton would talk about him 15 hours a week on Rush Limbaugh. And they'd make fun of him and they'd demonize him and do all kinds of things like that. But they knew that Rush Limbaugh was never going to change anything. He was just going to provide information. And nothing was going to happen with that information. And he knew it. Everybody knew it. The politicians knew it. Now action radio comes along, which is basically the opposite of talk radio. Talk radio does nothing. Action radio does everything. Our whole show is based on writing, lobbying, advocating the laws that set us free. Set us free from the very people that want to keep us enslaved. Well, that's a fight. We're in a fight. This is, folks, you know, to put it bluntly, the peaceful revolution is already here. We've started it. Now we just need millions of people to go, yeah, I think I can do that. I can send a bill link in. That's what it takes. But we have to convince people that you don't need a lawyer's permission to send in a bill. You know, you don't need the Supreme Court to say that what we do is okay. You don't need any of that stuff. The same reason you don't need Dr. Fascist to tell you to wear a mask. Because, first of all, they don't work. They're more dangerous than good. But think about that. Think of the power of what we're doing here. And part of the – I don't like to say this all the time because I know the FBI, KGB, the NSA, various folks. I know they're listening. They have to be. They're not stupid. They know that if we can organize the citizens into a national lobbying group, think about that for a minute. Think about people in Congress saying, yeah, I'm for Congress, taking the power of Congress to borrow money. That changes everything. Because now politicians are going to have to go to the people, and they'll have to run on the bills. So instead of running on the personality, see, parties like to run on personalities, right? They want to run on the personality of the person. Vote for this person, they'll change things. Well, no, they won't, because they're kowtowing to the party. Once you go to Congress as a member of a party, the party owns you. That's your company town. The party is your company town. You owe them. You'll never get away from them because you have to work for them, and you'll never get as much back as they give you for your campaign. You are dependent on them for your campaign and your career. You've sold your soul to the party. That's why nobody in Congress or legislature should be a member of a party. But think of the power if people have to run on the bills, not the personalities. That is a fundamental change in the way politics is done. Let's say this catches on in Australia, England, and Canada, and New Zealand, the places where our audiences are growing the fastest. Let's say they start working with a parliamentary system. Now look what just happened in England. You've got a new prime minister, Liz Truss, kind of like Margaret Thatcher too. So imagine what happens when she sticks around in England for a while and Donald Trump comes back here in 2024. You've got Reagan Thatcher all over again in Truss and Trump. It's kind of interesting. We're going to make some the Truss Trump team. We've got to play with that a little bit. But think about what's happening.
Yeah, so much going on. You may mention Margaret. I'm talking about Australia. Serena Williams is retired, and they call her the GOAT, whereas they don't mention Margaret Court, who has better stats and records than Serena Williams.
Yeah, it's interesting, Margaret Court, the name Court, she's a tennis player. I always find it interesting. See, I spent 4 years in Australia. I remember when Margaret Court was playing. You know,
she was tremendous. She did it in 7 years, less than time than what Serena. She retired in her early 30s. Serena's retiring at 40, not taking anything away.
Oh, no, Serena Williams is one of the world's greatest tennis players, but so is Margaret Court. Yeah. So why don't they like Margaret Court? I mean, I thought Australia, you know, she was one of their national sports heroes.
Because of her remarks about same sex and things like that.
Oh, so they take her entire accomplishments and they dismiss them because she said something about what? Same-sex marriage or what?
Yeah.
What'd she say?
Same-sex marriage, gay and lesbian. She made comments about tennis players and so on and so on. Not nothing. But there's nothing that I guess she revealed it before they came out.
Mm. That there were gay tennis players or something or what?
Oh, yeah. I posted in your Action Network.
Yeah, I saw it. I haven't read. I was getting ready for the show, but yeah.
You get a chance to read it.
I mean, obviously they're gay sports players, gay athletes. Who cares? I don't. As long as they're not trying to push the agenda.
Here's the thing, Greg.
Yeah.
You got this movement, and you know I'm always talking about what goes on amongst black society.
Right.
They rewrite history, create new words, and alter definitions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have. That's wrong.
It is wrong.
Critical race theory. It's critical race theory. That's what you get out of it. It's biased, one-sided.
You know, and you provide an invaluable service to me and everybody else who listens because you have insights into black Americans that you'd only have if you were you. You know, and so I don't know the things you know, and this is why I love having you on. You provide ancient history and African history and culture and things that just really broaden the show. And reminding, you know, all us white folks that stop feeling guilty. Go ahead.
It's my responsibility to share with people like you because you, in your lifetime, couldn't be in two or three places at the same time. So it's people that was in those other places that all convene here and share the experience in order to make the point come over more thoroughly than what it normally would.
Yeah. No, and this is why this show, I think we specialize in you know, bringing all kinds of folks together. And we got Josie, who grew up under communism in Nicaragua. You know, we've got you in the middle of the country of African descent. We've got, I don't know who else is here. We lost Dr. Peter Pry. He did pass away, so he won't be – I'm going to do a little tribute to him at some point. In fact,
yeah,
I want to call
– Yeah, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, well, In fact, let's do this. I've got some time right now. I don't know. I can do it another day. But I posted an article about that. So Dr. Peter Pry was with the Center for Security Policy. And I got a big picture of him. I posted the article on my page. Frank Gaffney wrote a really nice tribute to him. So probably after the show in a little bit, I'm going to call the center and say, hey, guys, I've got a gazillion recordings of Peter Pry over about 4 years. And, you know, we'll let them go find them. They're not hard to find. It's like every Monday, you know, going back. I'm going to probably, you know, copy some more links. I did a bunch of links starting in 2019. And so I'll probably take it through 2022, do about 3 years of links of these amazing shows that he did and say, here. Here's the historical record of Peter Pry, because the things he talked about in the show were just unbelievable. And so so obviously, you know, he's my friend. And so I've lost another friend. We lost Dr. Zelenko, who was my friend. I didn't have as much contact with him as I had with Dr. Pry, but I don't like losing people. You know, these are treasures. I'm grateful that they spent the time they did here to be able to talk to us. But I'm going to miss my chats with Peter Pry. I'll tell you that right now.
Divine intervention lends them to you for a short period of time. Then there's other assignments that they have to get to. They're taken from you.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I only talked to Dr. Walter Williams once, and once off the air, too. I was trying to get his PhD people to come up with a constitutional budget based on my article and my video. But I should play that interview again sometime, too. So I might talk to another person that has passed on, Herb London. I met him outside the CPAC in 2020 when they locked us. I'm 2018 when they locked us out because Trump was speaking, and this guy looked like Trump. I went up to him. I said, "You know who you look like?" He said, "Yeah, I know Donald Trump." I said, "Yeah, it's uncanny." I said, "Who are you?" Herb London, head of the London Policy Institute. "What do you do?" "Well, I talk foreign policy." Well, it turns out this guy wrote Trump's speech in Saudi Arabia. You know, the sword dance, that really incredible speech Trump made. But this guy wrote it. I'm sitting next to him. He actually came on the show. I've got his recording. I think I played it once. I might do it again. But I've had the privilege of talking to some unbelievable people, especially before they pass on, and been able to record them here on the show. Peter Pry, you know, Zev Zelenko, Herb London, Dr. Walter Williams, all these amazing people I've had this great chance to talk to. And so that's part of my service, is to preserve their voice with questions that no other journalist is going to ask them. But I will, because that's what I do. But it's a privilege to be able to do that. Anyway, let's.
Well, what time you got there?
Not yet. Well, see, BlogTalk, I didn't know this. My friend Lori told me. In fact, you probably talked to her. That BlogTalk gives you an extra hour. They don't acknowledge it officially, but. I got the clock behind the clock still ticking. It's kind of funny. So let me let it go for today. And
you're off the show board. So,
but it ends up in the podcast. It does end up in the podcast. Well, let me leave it for today. Let me leave you with a. I don't know if I play my. Well, let me play my whole one. I should. I'll put this on thing here. My new Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. It's about 11 minutes, so it's really good, but it's really long. So Bianca, let you go. Listen to it in the podcast, or you can just hang on the line, whatever you want to do. I'll mute your line. And everybody else, take a listen to this. I'll be back tomorrow morning. Tomorrow's Wednesday, so 7 o'clock. And I'll check and see if Captain Tom Stewart is going to join us and the other folks from our regular Wednesday crew. But I'll see you tomorrow. And this is our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for today. Anti-Federalist number 13. There's a lot in here. So enjoy your listening, and I'll see you tomorrow. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Anti-Federalist Paper number 13 was written by our old anonymous friend, under the name A. Farmer. The paper is titled The Expense of the New Government, referring to the Constitution being considered for ratification on this date, October 17, 1787. In the first paragraph, A. Farmer complains about overpaid government bureaucrats, even from the Articles of Confederation. Regarding that, he says, The truth is, when you carry a man's salary beyond what decency requires, he immediately becomes a man of consequence and does little or no business at all. That pretty much explains our multi-trillion dollar bureaucrat welfare establishment workforce. They knew it even before our Constitution was ratified. The second paragraph starts with a call to action. It implores all to make sure that if the Constitution is ratified by the states, it must include a Bill of Rights. Sadly, it did not until many years later. But A. Farmer and the Anti-Federalists knew that without one, the Constitution was for the government and not for the people. He says, "Rouse up, my friends, a matter of infinite importance is before you on the carpet, soon to be decided in your convention. The new Constitution. Seize the happy moment. Secure to yourselves and your posterity the jewel liberty, which has cost you so much blood and treasure by a well-regulated Bill of Rights from the encroachments of men in power. For if Congress will do these things in the dry tree when their power is small, what won't they do when they have all the resources of the United States at their command?" Well, we all know what they would do. They would create a coup to steal the government and rule by the tyranny of mandates, none of which are legal, and all of which constitute the very insurrection they blame on the true government and those who support it. A. Farmer continues by describing the proper place of bureaucrats in relationship to the people in terms of what this paper is all about, that being the expense of government, in this case, people who work in it. He says, "They are the servants of the public. You have an undoubted right to set their wages, or at least to say, thus far, you and those under you may go and no further. This would, in the end, ease Congress of a great deal of trouble, as it would put a stop to the impertinence of individuals in asking large salaries." You can usually tell the evil or folly of a government program or law by how quickly the supporters want it passed, implemented, or in the case of the Constitution, ratified. The Federalists are always in such a hurry, spending much time on the urgency of ratifying the Constitution before the states all break into factions or various nations of Europe declare war on us. Both were fiction, but they served a purpose, much as the propagandized creation of the fear of COVID, which is as always to increase government power and control. A. Farmer says of this artificial urgency, "My friends and countrymen, let us pause for a moment and consider. We are not driven to such great straits as to be obliged to swallow down every potion offered us by wholesale or else die immediately by our disease. We can form a constitution at our leisure and guard and secure it on all sides. We are paying off our state debt and the interest on the domestic as fast as Congress call upon us for it. As to the foreign debt, they have the promise of more interest from us than they can get anywhere else, and we shall be able to pay them both interest and principal shortly. But it is said they win declare war against us if we don't pay them immediately. Common sense will teach them better. We live at too great a distance and are too hardy and robust a people for them to make money out of us in that way." A. Farmer then describes various economic classes, from merchants to soldiers to government folks who want public debt and paper money abolished, but whatever the economic consequences or benefits, this still remains the fundamental problem that the Constitution by itself fails to guard our liberty by prohibiting government from enacting certain laws, regulations, policies, or practices. A. Farmer says, "But in neither of these cases do I wish to see it adopted without being guarded on all sides with a Magna Carta or a Bill of Rights as a bulwark to our liberties." So the economic consequences of funding the government, its officers, the national debt, and interest are subordinate to the essential component of a bulwark to our liberties. And of that, the Federalists have not spoken to this point. A. Farmer continues. He says, regarding the Constitution, but we need not be in a hurry about it. Consider, my friends, you are the persons who must live and die by this Constitution. A merchant or mechanic may dispose of his goods or pack them up in trunks and remove it to another clime in the course of a few months. But you cannot shoulder your lands or dispose of them when you please. It therefore behooves you to rouse up and turn your most serious and critical attention to this Constitution. So ends part one. In part two, A. Farmer issues a warning to his fellow citizens, which is also a precursor to the tyranny of the deep state and their stolen government has imposed on this country by a coup d'etat. A. Farmer says, a large representation has ever been esteemed by the best Whigs in Great Britain, the best barrier against bribery and corruption. And yet we find a British king having the disposition of all places, civil and military, and an immense revenue squeezed out of the very mouths of his wretched subjects, is able to corrupt the Parliament, devote him any supplies he demands to support armies, to defend the prerogatives of his crown, and carry fire and sword by his fleets and armies, to desolate whole provinces in the eastern world, to aggrandize himself and satisfy the avarice of his tyrannical subjects. Replace King with Brandon, and our plight will be accurately reflected in the history books. The next paragraph is so good, I just have to read it. A. Farmer says, no wonder our American ambassador, John Adams, struck with the brilliancy of the British court, where everything around St. James wears the appearance of wealth, ease, and plenty, should imagine a three-branch legislature only can produce these effects and make the subjects happy, should write a book in favor of such a government and send it over for the illumination of this Western world. If this is the sole fruit of his embassy, America will not canonize him for a saint on account of his services, when they have experienced the consequences of such a kind of government as he has planned out. In order to have formed the right judgment, he should have looked into the ditches which serve for graves for many of the human race, under hedges which serve as dreary habitations for the living, into the cottages of the poor and miserable, and critically examine with how much parsimony the mechanics, the day laborers, cottagers, and villagers live in order to support their high pampered lords, before he had wrote a book to persuade his country to pursue the same road to greatness, splendor, and glory, and have reflected in his own mind whether he could wish to see that country which gave him birth reduced to the same situation. And here we are today. In conclusion, A. Farmer submits the question of whether it makes sense to rush into ratifying this Constitution before all the details have been spelled out. I agree, which is why Action Radio is sponsoring a constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. Just one of many proposed overhauls planned to make the Constitution live up to its promise of limited government and no public debt. A. Farmer says, now I submit it to the good sense of the people of these states, whether it is prudent we should make so liberal and extensive a grant of power and property to any body of men in these United States before they have ever informed the public the amount of the public debt, or what the annual expenses of the federal government is or will be. The source for the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. What a day, huh? This has been fascinating. Anyway, Greg Penglis here. We'll be back tomorrow, as I said, at 7 a.m. Central Time. If you want to contribute to us, paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. But I'd much rather have advertisers. So big companies, small companies, any companies, any foundations, Heritage, you hear that? You know, take the money from one of your luncheons and send it down here to Action Radio. We've got that. And just write me, greg@writeyourlaws.com. So greg@writeyourlaws.com is our email. And so anything else, we've got the live chat line. We've got, excuse me, I'm sorry. We've got Skype. There's all kinds of ways to get in touch with us, you know, especially our newer folks listening in Canada, Australia, and the UK. And so feel free. And we'll be back tomorrow with our crazy crew. Our website here, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website, www.writeyourlaws.com. WriteYourLaws.com. And with that, I shall see you tomorrow morning. And we'll do it all again.